gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried. After the revolution.
This is the Quality News Network. The Bush administration and several Republican senators have reached an agreement on the interrogation and trials of suspected terrorists. The National Security Advisor met with GOP senators who want the legislation to make it clear that those suspects cannot be tortured and what classified material suspects and their lawyers can have access to. Congress is likely to vote on the measure next week. In New York today, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad maintained that his country's nuclear program is peaceful. He also says Iran has not hidden anything from nuclear inspectors. On the topic of Lebanon, Ahmadinejad refused to say whether he would comply with the Security Council's demand to withhold arms from Hezbollah. Meantime, eight German warships are heading to Lebanon as part of the UN-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. Parliament approved the deployment yesterday despite opposition by some who remain wary of the link between Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. In Baghdad today, U.S. General George Casey told the Associated Press that the conflict in Iraq is becoming an internal struggle for political and economic power. He says the country is moving away from fighting against coalition forces. In Washington, Pakistan's president told 60 Minutes that the U.S. threatened to bomb Pakistan if it did not join in the war on terrorism. Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage reportedly told him to, quote, be prepared to be bombed, be prepared to go back to the Stone Age, end quote. Musharraf is meeting with President Bush at the White House on Friday. In Indonesia today, three Christian militants were executed by firing squad. They were found guilty of a gun and machete attack on a school 6 years ago, which left 70 people dead. In Geneva, a UN expert says torture in Iraq may now be worse than it was under Saddam Hussein. He cited a new report that indicates militias, terrorist groups, and government forces are not treating prisoners humanely. He also said reports indicated torture is totally out of the hand. At a Harlem church today, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez offered discounted heating oil to low-income residents and called himself a friend of the Americans. That follows yesterday's speech in which he called President Bush the devil. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Space Shuttle Atlantis landed in Cape Canaveral this morning, ending its 12-day voyage. Its return was delayed after several identified objects, including a possible garbage bag, were seen floating near the shuttle. Officials have discovered a package of E. coli-contaminated Dole baby spinach in the refrigerator of a New Mexico woman who became ill. They've narrowed down the source of the outbreak to 9 California farms in Monterey, Santa Clara, and San Benito counties. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says people between the ages of 13 and 64 should receive routine HIV testing. British businessman Sir Richard Branson is pledging about $3 billion over the next 10 years to fight global warming. Motorola unveiling vending machine-like stores that will carry cell phones and accessories. They'll carry about 30 products and will be available at malls and airports. Hewlett-Packard no longer cooperating with authorities in its media leak scandal. California Attorney General Bill Lockyer says the company has advised against handing over more documents or further discussions. Rite Aid has posted a smaller quarterly loss, but its shares fell more than 7% today on the news of Walmart's low-priced generic drug plan. Light sweet crude settling at $61.59 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow down 80 points, NASDAQ down 15, S&P 500 down 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. This is Head On. It's Thursday evening. I'm Bob Kincaid. We have had a lot of fascinating discussion on the Head On Radio Network through the course of the day. And, of course, you understand the breaking news is that, as I predicted, and took some small amount of grief for it, I might add, as I predicted, apparently the Senate has succeeded in surrendering to Dear Leader with regard to the issue of torture. Because any time, you know, I realize the details are still what they like to call sketchy. But there are enough details out there to let you know. Well, I mean, the headline from the Associated Press, Bush GOP rebels. Boy, don't they sound exciting? It's like something out of Star Wars. They're rebels. John McCain's a rebel. Lindsey Graham is a rebel. If that is what constitutes a rebel these days, then there's not much left of the rebellion. The White House, newsy voice. The White House and rebellious Senate Republicans agreed Thursday on rules for the interrogation and trial of suspects in the war on terror, and President Bush urged Congress to make them law before adjourning for midterm elections. In other words, Lindsey Graham just got on his knees and did for George what Monica did for Bill, and John McCain did the same thing. Boy, that's leadership for a guy who thinks he's going to be the president in 2008, isn't it? Because, you see, this was a compromise hammered out by the Senate leadership, which ain't Democrats, and by Senate Republicans. So you know for a fact that the anti-torture contingent was simply not heard from. Now, I've got something I'd like for you to see, if you don't mind. Because sometimes it helps to visualize what it is we're talking about. I would like for you to go to a website when you get a minute. Don't want you to turn away from the program unless you've got enough bandwidth to multitask. I'd like for you to go to alasbabylon.com, alasbabylon.com. And there, close to the top of the page, is a YouTube video clip from the film Jacob the Liar, starring Robin Williams. It is a graphic representation of what waterboarding. It's waterboarding. It's like surfboarding. Oh, Marcia. Oh, Greg. Is Greg going to be all right? Marcia, Marcia, Marcia. No, it's waterboarding. And it's torture. Hell, it's torture. It's torture when you send the beer or the Sprite or the brown liquor and soda water down the wrong tube. 15-20 seconds at the dinner table. And somebody reaches over and pet and claps you real hard on the back and you go, thank you. Well, waterboarding is that. Only a million times worse. And see, I don't know the details of the senatorial surrender to the cult of Divine Caesar. I don't know the details. But I don't have to. Because I can tell you that Karl Rove called the renegade rebel senators, you know, that Lindsey Graham, he's a rebel. That's why he's got that rebel flag and that rebel uniform. He's a rebel, just like James Dean. Well, I don't know. James Dean was a rebel without a cause. Lindsey Graham, John McCain, that crowd, rebel without a clue. Oh, no, but go on over to Alas Babylon. Have a look. Look at what torture is. And by the way, please to note who it is in this film clip doing the torturing. Now, if you were listening to this program a couple of nights ago, you found out where it was we learned all about waterboarding. You found out who really invented and perfected the technique. Somebody out there has been reading naughty things. Things they ought not and still call themselves Americans, you see. So go and have a look at waterboarding. Now, waterboarding, this waterboarding issue has ramifications that, of course, people like Dear Leader really don't ponder. For those of you who are familiar, for reasons perhaps similar to mine, familiar with the Bible stories. Somewhere along the way, I was always taught that the final plague in the run up to the Exodus, the final plague was decreed that whatever Pharaoh said he would do to the children of Israel would be done instead to him. And so, and I can't quote you chapter and verse, but it's something, you know, that he's going to go out and kill the firstborn son of every Hebrew family. And instead, God turns around and says, hey, I'm rubber, you're glue, what bounces off me and sticks to you. And so he sends the angel of death over and kills all the firstborn Egyptian males, at which point the angel of death passes over the children of Israel. That has special relevance for this debate. That's very special relevance for this debate. Because, you see, whatever it is that we choose to do to other people in the cause of our war on terror, they will do to us. Only 10 times worse. You want to waterboard Islamofascists? Guess what, Mr. and Mrs. America? They're going to waterboard and then some your son, your daughter, when they get their hands on them in the middle of one of George Bush's little wars. Is that really what you learned in Sunday school? Is that how you learned that it's supposed to work? I don't think it is. All the same, though, that's what it's going to be. Guess who's in the role of Pharaoh here? Here's a hint. It's not the people who are the descendants of Pharaoh. Pharaoh, in this instance, happens to be a jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout who lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And he has declared what he will do to the rest of the world, and the rest of the world is waiting for an opportunity to do as much and more to us as revenge. See, you can't engender revenge unless you do something that makes people want vengeance. You know, they talk about a worldwide demand for oil and a hunger for oil and a need for oil, and they say the world runs on that. Well, I'll tell you this much. A significant portion of the world right now runs on a profound demand for vengeance. V ain't just for vendetta. It's for vengeance, sunshine. And the world is beginning to look at us with the ravening eyes of a wolf and a hunger for that vengeance. And they're not willing to sit back and, you know, vengeance is mine, say it the Lord. Nah. No, because a lot of people think that that's a little bit stingy on the Lord's part and they want to do the Lord's work for him. That's what this little man on Pennsylvania Avenue has done to us and will do to us. This is the future he is engendering for children who are, freshmen, sophomores, juniors, seniors in high school, who will go out and sign up with the military and then have God-awful things done to them in God-awful places on planet Earth. We need to take a break. Well, now let's go to the phones. Oh, and a reminder, we will be joined by a right-winger at the bottom of the hour. A free marketeer by the name of George Landreth from the Frontiers of Freedom Foundation wants to tell you about why it is that net neutrality is such a bad, bad thing. So, you know, I want to present that argument, and let's see if it holds water. Now, let's go to the phones. Our good friend Mike calls from Woodstock, New York. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program. Glad you called.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well.
Hold on, let me turn down this radio. Sorry, man.
Okay. I got a minute.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
I'm feeling your fire tonight.
I'm sorry, I lost you there. Agnes was communicating with me. Could you?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling the fire tonight coming out of you.
Oh, well, it may get even hotter, Mike.
I was driving along in my vegetable mobile on the way up to Woodstock today. And by the way, the Dalai Lama came to our town and blessed that town today.
Oh, very cool.
He did it because he has a big temple here, and they're kind of expanding. And he came through, and he just did it. Just I guess only like 500 people were there. And,
wow!
I couldn't make it because I had something going on in New York City, but I know a lot of people were there, so there was a real nice feeling in the town. I mean, there always is, but it was extra special.
Well, that man brings good feelings with him. Because he's the real deal. He's not some old Nazi anti-aircraft gunner running around talking about why Muslims are bad people. He's not an American religion industry charlatan and shill and hack and flack running around trying to con grannies out of their Social Security checks. The Dalai Lama simply is a man of peace. And, you know, it's like something out of the scriptures, you know, by their fruits ye shall know them. And, you know, his fruit is pure.
Yes, yes.
It's not the rotten stuff that we get from these other hacks.
His message, from what I was told, and I guess he usually has the same message, which is one of love. And one thing my buddy pointed out, who was there, I talked to him after he came back, and he said, you know, you think of all these so-called religious leaders around the world and what they're talking about, including the Pope and the world leaders, and they're all talking about hatred and torture and murder. And this guy has a very simple message, which is love, and also talking about not desiring wealth and the downfall of wealth, the fact that most rich people are very miserable people. And those were his messages. But I, you know, I was thinking about him. I was listening to Air America. Randy was real good today, and NPR, and hearing the news and hearing that some kind of compromise has been reached. Just trying to grasp the idea of compromising on the idea of torture. And I did go and watch that waterboarding segment from that movie.
It gives you a pretty good idea.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. And the thing is, that has, I mean, because all you got to do, Mike, is put yourself in the shoes of the victim. Now, you don't have to adopt the victim's views on life or whether or not it's Allah or Yahweh or God or whomever that you're serving. All you got to do is be the guy on the board going into the water. It's a very simple act, and that tells me a lot about the right-wing monsters who advocate this kind of stuff, Mike. That tells me that they have somehow or another turned off a significant portion of their souls.
I don't understand how a human being could do that. My girlfriend was saying to me, she's from Japan, and she's a Buddhist, and she just looked at me and said, how can anybody torture another human being? I don't understand it.
I don't either. I mean, I haven't had excised from me, whatever it is that allows you to do that to some other human being. It's elementary stuff not to do this kind of garbage to other human beings.
Well, look what we do to animals.
Sure.
Look at the way slaughterhouses are kept. Animals are raised for meat, and this whole process is dehumanizing, maybe through our consumption of animals also we've become dehumanized as well.
It's possible. My thesis, Mike, has been that the urge for vengeance is what allows this to happen, because this isn't national security. This is revenge for September 11th. It is. And you know what? When the bombs start falling on Iran, it's going to be revenge for the embassy. There's a long, long history of a vengeful nature in a certain quantity of people.
Where did Christ ever suggest any of this? And I say this with a respect for Christianity, although I'm a Jew myself. I do actually do spiritual work with a Christian group that has a lot of Jews in it. It's interesting. There's Jews and Buddhists and Hindus. We're all there together doing this thing. But the one message from Christ, his biggest message was anti-capital punishment, anti-torture.
Yeah.
And I really feel that the whole idea has become so perverted. I think Christ would just go nuts if he ever saw what had happened in his name.
Well, you see, there's not a single thing that Christ advocated that didn't arise at some point out of the long Hebrew tradition that had gone before him and the Pharisaic tradition that had developed. There's a significant argument to be made that while the Pharisees take a pretty rough ride in the first four Gospels, that actually they were probably a primary influence on Yeshua's teachings. And there is not one thing in the words as they are recorded of Yeshua that in any way permits any of this to go on. That's why I feel like we have an obligation as moral people to take the word Christianity away from these people, because they wouldn't be recognized.
You know, by the way, the Mayan calendar ends in the year 2012. Do you know about this?
December 23rd or 24th, if I recall correctly.
And many of us think that in this year there's going to be a cataclysmic shift and an entire paradigm shift, and something else happens, and we don't know what.
Well, you know, within the Mayan calendar round, and it was, of course, adopted by the Mexica people, and you can see it in what is called the Sunstone. There is a 5,000 and some odd year round that cycles through, and at the end of every one of these, the world gets destroyed. Now, the last time anything even remotely as significant as that date occurred in the Mexica or Aztec calendar was along about the time that the Spanish arrived in Mesoamerica, and the Spaniards and Roman Catholicism committed genocide and utterly erased a number of freestanding, brilliant civilizations. So, you know, they've got the world destroyed by wind, the world destroyed by water, the world destroyed by fire, the world destroyed by ice or cold. Somehow or another, all of that was maintained within the Mayan cultural memory. And I can't remember right now what we're supposed to get this time through, but I got a feeling, I don't know if the Mayans had a word for radiation.
Well, anyway, I'm gonna move on, let you move on as well.
Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm very heartened that I have brothers and sisters heading south, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think you people that are down there in the south and in the west and everywhere, just know there's progressive people everywhere. And I like this online radio that you guys are doing. And it's provided a real alternative to Air America for me.
Well, you make a great deal of difference in all of it, Mike. And you and others like you are the reason that it's happening. And we really appreciate the time that you spend with us.
All right. Shalom.
Shalom. Our good friend Mike in Woodstock, New York. Let's take a break, Agnes tells me. And like I said, we've got a discussion coming up here presently on net neutrality. We'll see if I can hold my own. We'll see if my guest can hold his. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
More than 1 million Americans have HIV, and many don't even know it. With improved treatment and care, people are now living with HIV/AIDS. But this life-saving treatment never reaches people who don't know they're infected. Knowing your HIV status is the best way to help win the fight against AIDS. To find a testing site near you, visit www.hivtest.org.
Bob, and I'm back. See, this is what happens when we book a guest and then we tell you in advance that we're going to have the guest. This is 2 days in a row now, and I'm beginning to wonder if there's something stinky going on. Because 2 days in a row now, I have tried to get some bona fide right-wingers on this program to talk to them about their beliefs and why they believe the way they do. Okay? Yesterday, it was supposed to be Bobby Schindler, the brother of Terry Schiavo. They booked it, and then they bailed on it. Now, I have just asked Agnes to dial the number that was provided to me by the public relations professional who booked this interview, and it turns out the number I was given was a property management company. Now Agnes is going to try to see if she can get the real person on. Okay, well, the PR pro got the number wrong. I'll have to tell him that. So Agnes is on the phone right now, and maybe this can... Boy, so George Bush walks into a bar. No, okay. In honor of our good friend Mike's having told us about the visit of the Dalai Lama to Woodstock, New York. Buddhist monk walks up to a hot dog stand and says, "Make me one with everything. Ba-dum-bum. I'll be here all the week. Don't forget to tip your waitress." So, I'll tell you what. Bring Susan on. Hey, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
You are having fun tonight, aren't you?
You know, if I had any more fun, I don't think I could stand myself.
Well, got a piece of information for you.
Okay.
That website you gave us, AlaskaBabylon.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that name came from?
I'm trying to, offhand, no.
Okay. An author by the name of Pat Frank in the 1950s wrote a book called AlaskaBabylon. Now, if you want to read something that will scare you silly, read that book. Now, it was supposedly fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the story of a guy in Florida who gets a telegram from his brother, who is in the Air Force, in SAC. And it says, AlaskaBabylon. And that is an agreed-upon signal. The guy has inside information.
And the balloon's going up.
Go up.
Yeah.
World War III. And this is a very, it's an extremely well-written, well-thought-out story of what happens afterwards. And it will scare you silly.
Well, I need to try to get my hands on that book then.
It's still in print. It's been in print continuously since the 1950s. That's
But it's a biblical reference too, isn't it, Susan?
Yeah. And the biblical reference is just, it gives it to it in the book.
I mean, isn't that where Nebuchadnezzar throws his hand, alas, Babylon, you know.
Yeah, and, I can't remember the exact reference. They even mention it in the book. That's how somebody else figures out what it is, what's going on. But it's terrifying, and it's also very, very germane to what's going on, because as far as I'm concerned, that maniac at 1600 Pennsylvania, he's trying to start World War III.
You're not alone in your belief. I had an email exchange earlier today with someone who says, "Well, that's it. We lost. We've failed. They're gonna start World War III, and we weren't able to prevent it."
I got news for you. If and when the nukes start flying, I'm glass. I'm gone. Because I know what's targeted here. I do hope that somewhere an ICBM is targeted at Crawford, Texas. I really do.
Well, I mean, the thing...
It's not a sheer bloody-minded revenge. I'm sorry, I'm too Scots to
Well, Susan, the way...
I want my pound of flesh to take an honor guard with me.
Well, I understand. Believe me, I understand that completely. What I personally fear, or the scenario that I fear, is one in which, because, you know, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has been, he's been kind of cryptic from time to time, saying, you know, you'll find out, you'll find out, you'll find out. Now, we know that they can't build a nuclear device, and the Iranians have repeatedly said they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't have is an accurate tracking of all the supposed suitcase nukes that were manufactured by the Soviet Union over the years. Now, there are some who say that the doggone things couldn't possibly even work now. Now, I never knew that a nuclear device was like a Twinkie and could go bad.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we're dealing with a madman, okay? And the madman I'm talking about is George Bush.
Yeah.
And if a so-called radioactive dirty bomb, or what the scientists call a radiologic bomb, as opposed to a radio, was to go off in some city... he would see that as an, because you see, George Bush wants to nuke somebody.
Yeah.
He really wants to get to use it. Because that would make him, that's, because then he could pick up the phone and go, "Heh, see, Daddy, I got you."
Well, that plus the fact that the only other president who's ever used a nuke was a Democrat.
Well, yeah, so he's got to balance that out, too. But what I'm getting at is that, say, in radiologic or a suitcase bomb goes off somewhere in the United States, he'll nuke somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody will nuke us.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we learned, or I thought we learned, Susan, from the genesis of the First World War was that secret treaties have a way of coming around to bite you in the butt.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, consequently, when the Austro-Hungarian Empire attacked, and then they had to, and then there was a pact, and they attacked the Serbs, and the Russians attacked the Austro. And I don't even remember the full course of event, and then Kaiser Wilhelm had to enter on the, and it was all because of these secret treaties.
Yeah.
Of protection. You know, we'll fight on your behalf. And who's to say, for instance, that there's not a secret treaty between, say, Iran and North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what makes me worry for people who live where you live on the West Coast.
Yeah. And then one with North Korea and China.
Sure.
Yeah. And we know China has nukes. We know North Korea has nukes. And we know China has the delivery system. Oh, fun and games, you know. And, okay, now we're back to mad. Mutual assured destruction.
Well, I wish we were. Frankly, Susan, I wish we were back to mad. We're not there now because, you know, the United States under George Bush has said, you know, nothing can, you know, all, you know, they repeatedly like to say things like all options are, you know, Dick Cheney does it. All options are on the table with regard to Iran. That means he wants to nuke them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course you've got, I forget which crazy Republican congressman it was who not too awfully long back, a year or so ago, recommended that if any sort of radiologic or radioactive device ever went off in the United States, that we ought to schedule an airburst right over Mecca. He said that.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, he said that in public.
Oh.
This is, you know, I grew up, and you've got you're a little bit older than me. You grew up in the Cold War.
Uh-huh.
And it was all that duck and cover stuff and the black and yellow triangle circle on the water barrels and iodine tablets in the attic of the grade school.
Uh-huh, yeah, and look for the shelter signs and all that crud.
Yeah, fallout shelters.
Which would have done you any good.
And that was a scary time to live through.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a young man when Ronald Reagan got behind the microphone and said, "I have just declared the Soviet Union illegal. The missiles begin flying in 5 minutes." And broadcast that to the world.
Yeah, and I lived through and I was well aware of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and I knew, I didn't know it at the time, but I found out later.
Yeah.
They had, the bombers at the the decision point.
Yeah, the fail-safe point. Sure.
The fail-safe point.
And the thing, the only thing that saved us then is that we had cool, brilliant heads at the helm of government. We don't have that now.
No, we got a maniac.
If Nikita Khrushchev came back from the grave and confronted George Bush, he'd say, "Bring him on."
You bet.
And I mean, these are the kind of people who sit there. One of my favorite films, Susan, used to be Dr. Strangelove, because
I can't watch it anymore.
It's not funny anymore.
No.
Because the people who talk about acceptable losses.
Yeah, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, well, they're in charge of the government now.
You know, if Khrushchev, as far as I'm concerned, if Khrushchev came back from the dead, he would rub his hands in glee and say, "Yes, we have him." Because he would.
Well, here's our Bible verse, Susan. Oh, wait a minute. Well, I thought I had it. Doggone it. It's out of Revelations. Everything comes from Revelations.
Oh, of course.
But it was, "Alas, alas, Babylon, that great city." Here we go. No, these people, is this the October surprise?
Oh, please, I hope not.
You know, we had the audio last night from retired General Gardner, who says, you know, there's already military operations going on the ground in Iran.
Yeah.
I'm certain of it. And, you know, is this the kind of government that you could envision doing that kind of thing, Susan?
Oh.
I mean, that's all you have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're sitting here talking about torture, and it is a, God, it's such a sickening conversation, such a sickening inquiry to be making as a citizen of the United States. But we are making that inquiry. And we're talking about the torture of individuals. But the fact of the matter is, right now we are facing a situation in which we are talking about the torture and the horrific death of millions.
Yeah. And if I have to tell you, if the balloon goes up, I sincerely hope I'm one of the first ones to go, because radiation poisoning is not a fun way to die.
No, it's an awful way to die. And but the thing is that I remember Sting had a verse in a song called Russians and Americans called that said there's no such thing as a winnable war. It's a lie that we don't believe anymore. Well, unfortunately, we have madmen in charge of the government who do believe that there's such a thing as a winnable nuclear exchange. Now, you want, guess what? I mean, I'm just extrapolating things. They don't pay me hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to sit in a think tank and come up with this stuff, although I think, you or I could come up with the same stuff that the goobers that are sitting in Washington, D.C. come up with. The fact is, let a nuclear device go off anywhere in the Muslim world, guess what's going to happen? There's going to be a coup in Pakistan, and they're going to drag Pervez Musharraf out of his palace, and they are going to tear him down to molecules, and they're going to get hold of the Pakistani nuclear arsenal. And for once, they're not going to be thinking about aiming it at India.
Yeah.
They're going to nuke Israel. Israel's a likely-looking target.
Oh, yeah.
Because Israel, by virtue of its relationship with the United States, stands in as our Middle Eastern surrogate. So they nuke Israel. So then we got to nuke Pakistan.
And then they start one.
And then China nukes us. And we nuke China.
And then,
talk about your domino theory. There's your real domino theory, Susan.
And Russia will be sitting there praying that we will forget the nukes that are sitting in Russia.
Oh, yeah, and five of the Istans, you know, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, all of those, they entered into an agreement, in the last month or so, that they would not participate in any nuclear proliferation on their soil. You know what the Bush administration did, Susan?
Hmm.
They criticized that.
Oh.
Well, that's not very smart.
Well, that's likely, yeah.
Get that. Nuclear non-proliferation is not very smart.
I think I found our first.
Okay. I've got Revelation 18, verse 10.
Da, 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 da.
Ah, yeah, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas.
Great city Babylon, that mighty city. In 1 hour thy judgment comes.
Now, I don't buy into all this apocalyptic hooey.
Neither do I.
I personally think John the Divine was on acid or mushrooms or some sort of natural. Yeah, or maybe, you know, just a few years alone on a rock like Patmos and not being able to talk to anybody.
That'll do it.
Yeah, after a while, you know, hello birds, hello trees. I don't go in for that stuff, but you know what? The problem is there are a lot of people out there, Susan, who do, and they think that it is their job to. I mean, they I guess they literally think that they're going to harness Jesus's holy rolls to a nuclear missile and drag him back to Earth behind it.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I remember most about this book, I can't remember the character's name, but it's the very last line of the book, and. And it says, so-and-so turned to face the thousand-year night. And that's what we will be. A thousand years of night.
Yeah, Randy Bragg.
Randy, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, brother.
We are in a terrifying time.
You ought to read that book. It will scare you.
Well, I'm gonna try to get my hands on it. I'll get the library to order it for me.
They've probably got it in stock.
Not this one. Our library is a trailer. So, you know, they have to ride off to a bigger trailer. There's that. Are you familiar with Margaret Atwood's book, The Handmaid's Tale?
Yes, I've read it.
That is a post-nuclear apocalypse vision.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, where feminists and liberals and progressives read that book and saw it as a nightmarish a warning of what happens with theocratic authoritarianism, the other side read it and went, cool!
Yeah. They said, oh, goody, we can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't watch Failsafe. I can't watch On the Beach. All the fun's been taken out of Dr. Strangelove for me.
Yeah.
I never realized that I would be living in a nightmare. And all of this, everybody said, well, you know, it'll be such a shame to see Sandra Day O'Connor leave the Supreme Court. She was a voice of moderation. Well, that voice of moderation gave us George W. Bush in the year 2000 in a case called Bush versus Gore.
Blessings be upon her.
Yeah.
Another one is Lucifer's Hammer. I read a lot of science fiction because there's a lot of subversive attitude that
you
put into the pages of those novels. It's the way that these authors shove this stuff down people's throats without them knowing it's being said to them. And they seem to be invariably liberals. Because all of this stuff they're talking, and they could be talking, every one of them, about the Bush family. All of these authors, from Weber's Bonner Harrington series to...
I cut my teeth on Robert A. Heinlein.
Oh, you and me both.
I acknowledge Robert A. Heinlein had what appears to be a little bit of a fascist libertarian streak.
Oh, boy, did he.
But there are so many things that he spoke to that are looking so much more and more realistic.
Yes, the citizenship classes in Starship Troopers are
mm-hmm.
sounding more and more reasonable to me.
I mean, why else? Why, you know, I can foresee a future in which you have to serve in the military to have citizenship in the United States, and it's not that far off because, after all, the Republican Party has proposed changing the citizenship structure of this nation to omit. Babies born to illegal aliens inside the continental United States. They've even got a cute little name for them, Susan. They call them anchor babies.
Oh, crap.
Because that anchors the illegals to the United States because they got a little citizen baby. And of course, these right-wing Klansmen Republicans like Tom Tancredo, they talk about anchor babies as if, somewhere off in Chihuahua State, that there's mommy and daddy Mexican are sitting there looking at the calendar going, okay, now if we do it now and we get to the United States by, you can have your anchor, baby, in the desert just over. And if we only build the fence, we can make that anchor baby be born in Mexico. The Republican women, the Republican Women's Club of Alabama, Susan, had a fundraiser by selling little Mexican anchor babies. Oh, baby dolls.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it is disgusting. These are the people we're dealing with. These are the people who think there are winnable wars. These are the people who think that because we've got enough nuclear weapons to destroy the world 19 dozen times over, that
we need a few more.
Right. But see, the thing I keep coming back to, the only thing that gives me hope is that having watched an interview with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and having read some of what he said, I think he understands how many nuclear devices we have, too. And he understands that George Bush is crazier than a runover dog.
Right. Oh, I did have a little chat with my Republican senator's office today about that photo ID requirement.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't tell me how he was going to vote.
That's so because he's going to vote in favor of it.
Oh, of course. I told him if he did, I was sending him, since it was basically a Klansman's vote, I was going to send him a fresh sheet. And I'm going to. Not our night.
Well, now, sometimes we have to treat these people for what they are. Susan, it's so good talking to you.
Well, I'm...
You know, we can at least have a smile, a little bit of a laugh.
Here's a laugh for you. Get a book called by H. Beam Piper called Four Star Planet. And they have the people in this book have a unique style of a government.
Okay. Well, I love H. Beam Piper. I'm a big...
You will laugh yourself silly.
Well, I've got it. I'll get my hands on it then.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Take care. Have a good evening. Our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Let's go on and talk to Dave. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. Didn't mean to run you off the first time.
Oh, that's all right. I thought you were going to be with a guest, but I guess.
Well, I did too, but, you know, that's the, I don't understand it. Well, I do understand it. Right-wingers can't, they can't make a case unless they're talking in an echo chamber.
With talking points. Yeah, they don't. Anyway, I've been a theory that I have been putting together in my head is that there is a generalized anger among these White House cons, that the whole Bush, Cheney, Rove, Condoleezza, Rumsfeld, all them, a generalized anger in which causing and inflicting harm, particularly on the have-nots, who they see as their natural enemy, that is gratifying to them, so that if they can cause people to be homeless and cold and hungry and without medical care, all of that has a payoff for them. And altogether consistent with that is torturing. You know, if you can cause people pain and grief, that too is that letting out some of this generalized anger that they have towards people, particularly the have-not people. That's the theory I'm working on. And that's,
well, I think it sounds to me like it's got some legs.
Yeah. I think it, you know, it suggests that there's maybe some gaps in there that need to be filled, some voids in their earlier experiences. But I think they are gratified by causing grief. Part of it, I think, that one of the reasons might be that I think that they alone know how badly they had to cheat to get in office. You know, they would have liked it, I think, had there been a lot of people voting for them. But they didn't. They had to rig the election big time, and that's annoying. That makes you angry. You don't like the people. The hell with the people. They didn't vote for me, you know?
Well, you know, we've almost forgotten the fact that George Bush lost the election. Even our side. I mean,
Big time, I think.
I brought that up in a little bit of raving I was doing the other night, and people wrote to me and said, you know, all I think about is 2004. I've forgotten what the ripoff was in 2000. We've forgotten that this man has no legitimate right to occupy the White House. We have forgotten that 9/11 did not have to happen. We've forgotten that Afghanistan and Iraq did not have to happen. We could be cruising along in just plain old boring peace.
Some truly dreadful people have stolen our government, Bob, and we're paying for that big time. You know, and I think many of us wonder, what in the world can we do to undo what has happened to us? This is a democracy. We, the people, have some say in this, but it's kind of overwhelming. Most people think, what can I do? What can I do? Write letters, call radio shows, stand in lines, get in demonstrations. No, we do all that we can, but they tend to think, the message that comes through the lines for me is, we don't care what you think, and we don't care how you vote. We control all that, you know.
Well, but we got to keep talking. Yeah, we can go to the protests, we can carry a sign, we can participate in a picket, but we above all, the one thing that the one thing that is most terrifying to them is our refusal to remain silent. So again, it's what you know. If you can make it to a protest, that's fine. I applaud everyone who does. But you know what? The greatest value is what you say in the line at the grocery store. Well, the greatest value is what you say when you talk to somebody across the gas pumps at the self-serve.
Mm-hmm.
That's where dialogue takes place. And you know, maybe we strengthen and empower and embolden ourselves a little bit by participating in things like this program, Bruce Birch's program, Dr. Bill's, Mark Levine's, Guy James's. You know, this is empowerment.
I wonder what percentage of people that are, I don't know, stupid for a better word, listen to your kind of programs. You know, I may be with the hope that they can call in and sell a talking point to somebody. I don't know, but.
Well, I know there are a few little weirdos running around the fringe of my program because I hear from them from time to time. But mostly, just as what happened with the interview that was scheduled yesterday and the interview that was scheduled today. Now, you listen to the program, Dave. I am the soul of courtesy to anybody who will take the time to share their time and call this program. And that does not apply just to people who agree with me. I was looking forward to the discussion with Mr. Landreth this evening because he seems to believe that the free market will solve all problems and that if we just leave the telecoms alone and let them put me out of business and charge monstrous tariffs to Google and Yahoo and people like that, that it's going to be frisbees and wheat checks for everyone.
I think at least one of your colleagues, Guy, his patience for these wingers is now severely diminished. He is not beneath. So may I be frank with you? You are probably the most shallow-thinking human being I have ever talked to.
Well, and you'll get there from time to time. I'm not going to say that I've never blown my top at a right winger, but usually it's after they start the. Have you forgot the lessons of 9/11? That's when that stuff starts. And you know, once they take the gloves off, I'm not going to sit there and sing Kumbaya while they slit my throat. No.
Well, I think for the most part, just listening to the people that you hear, you have a pretty enlightened audience, and I think the whole head-on group really is aware. They've thought it out. It strikes me that way.
No, I think I think they think a lot of this stuff out. It's just that their thought processes are sick and twisted and probably addled by really bad drugs somewhere in the past. Dave, we've got to roll on because we got the news up on top of it.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Always good to hear from you.
Good day.
Our good friend Dave in Northern California. It is time for the news. You want to get in on this? I'm sorry. I was set up with one thing and then the schedule went to caca. So ring the phone. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is Conversation Radio on America's Liberal Voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
News Network. Three Republican senators and the Bush administration have announced a compromise on a terrorism-related bill. Bloomberg News reports that the measure would prevent suspected terrorists from accessing classified information during their trials. It also clarifies which interrogation techniques can be used. President Bush is urging Congress to send him the bill before it recesses next week. At a news conference in New York today, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad maintained that his country's nuclear program is peaceful. He also says Iran has not hidden anything from nuclear inspectors. The Iraqi Defense Ministry says insurgents are using a new tactic in suicide car bomb attacks. Instead of recruiting volunteers, insurgents are kidnapping people, rigging their vehicles with explosives, then blowing them up remotely after the hostages have been released. A new United Nations report says that more than 5,000 people died violent deaths in Baghdad during July and August. That's a much higher figure than the one released from the city's morgue. Also in Iraq, Italian troops turned over security in a southern province to local officials. Iraqis now have control of two of the country's 18 provinces. In Afghanistan today, the top U.S. general said U.S. troop levels will remain at 21,000 until at least next year. He also said the number of Taliban fighters and their influence have grown in the southern parts of the country. In Pakistan, some Muslim clerics and religious scholars are demanding that Pope Benedict be removed from his position. He's still under fire for comments he made in Germany about a link between Islam and violence. In Bangkok, parliamentary duties have been taken over by the new military rulers following this week's bloodless coup while the prime minister was in New York. Across Thailand, political party meetings have been banned and the media is being restricted. In Washington, several Democrats have criticized Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez for his remarks yesterday, including calling President Bush the devil. House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi called Chavez, quote, a thug. Congress has approved a bill that protects U.S. military personnel from predatory sales of high-fee life insurance and investments. The bill would ban sales of a mutual fund investment. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Officials have discovered a package of E. coli contaminated Dole baby spinach in the refrigerator of a New Mexico woman who became ill. They've narrowed down the source of the outbreak to Monterey, Santa Clara, and San Benito counties. In response to the E. coli outbreak, an industry group representing about 3,000 growers is expected to unveil a new food safety proposal later today. British businessman Sir Richard Branson is pledging about $3 billion over the next 10 years to fight global warming. OPEC ministers encouraging the use of a new technology to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. It involves removing gases from industrial activities and transferring it into oil reserves. That would cut carbon dioxide emissions in half. A privacy rights group has launched an anonymous web browser. TorPark is a modified version of portable Firefox. Walmart is starting a test program in Tampa to sell 30-day supplies of generic drugs for $4. They'll extend the test to the entire state of Florida by January. FedEx reports its first quarter profit up 40% thanks to strong demand for ground and international shipments. Light sweet crude settled at $61.59 on the barrel today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow down 80 points, the NASDAQ down 15, the S&P 500 down 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
When I do it,
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It is time to roll into hour two. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get so heavy and apocalyptic and spooky and stuff, but we live in spooky, spooky times. You know, when Cousin It runs the country, it makes about as much sense as anything Dear Leader says. In point of fact, Dear Leader sat down to a conversation with crackhead journalist Wolf Blitzer of CNN. I've got that audio. And what I think we'll do is we'll listen to it, you and me. And if you if you were scared before, this will make the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck. Because it's a mix of the same old crap and the same older crap, all packaged up in a new and terrifying format. Got an email here from our good friend Andy in the Netherlands. Bob, I just saw that Jesus Camp trailer. Yikes. Yeah. Go and search ABC News and look at the expose they did on it. That's where you get to see the really fun stuff, like the little children bashing the ceramic mugs with government written on it, and them being told, science tells you nothing. But Andy says, it did help me, though, to completely understand the unified force that is the neocons and the fundies. They're nihilists. And I had never considered them in that context before, but I think Andy may be right. He says, they believe in relative truth and morality, which only pertains to their kind and not to the enemy. This ultimately opens the door for things like torture, theft of oil, and preemptive strikes. Furthermore, they have no respect for history unless it suits their agenda at the moment. They wish to radically break with history and create a future of their own design, and words and ideas like freedom and democracy have no meaning unless they are used to refer to material stuff like oil and money. And that's pretty much the definition of nihilism. As far as the lying goes, nihilists don't lie, they just don't believe in truth or history. They choose to live in a fantasy land. God help us all. God, help us all. Let us all help each other. You know, as I was sharing with Susan and I were sharing our love for science fiction there. And I said I had cut my teeth on Robert A. Heinlein. Probably the single most important book that man ever wrote was one called Stranger in a Strange Land. Now, you do have to get over the fact that is borne out in Heinlein's other works that he had some sexual fetishes, and he was profoundly sexist. But when he goes into political theory and he goes into religious theory, he makes some fairly solid sense, especially in Stranger in a Strange Land. And the central religious tenet that is set forth in that book, i.e., thou art God, which I think probably builds on something from Kierkegaard, that is profound. The idea of the divine spark in all of us and the idea of harnessing it together. If you hold to a notion that there is a divine spark or something like that in each or any one of us, and you really believe that sort of thing, nuclear holocausts become impossible. Wars that claim hundreds of thousands of innocent lives become unthinkable. And frankly, the cults like the Southern Baptists become untenable. Because, of course, it was so-called Southern Baptists, if you recall. No, not so-called. They really are. They're Southern Baptists. Who gave the imprimatur of approval to George Bush's war against the people of Iraq. Have you noticed that? And that's another little language thing that sort of grabbed me a day or so ago. Have you noticed that it is routinely referred to in the Johnny on the Spot American Free Press? It's referred to as the war in Iraq. The war in Iraq. There's a war, and it just happened to break out in Iraq. You know, kind of like chicken pox goes through the elementary schools every year. It's a war. It's a shame. And it's in Iraq. Pardon me for a moment. Could we quit playing on their on their field? Could we call this what it is? Could we call this the war against the people of Iraq? It's either that or it's a civil war. Now, as we listen to crackhead journalist Wolf Blitzer, you'll hear about whether it's a civil war or not. Now, this is just the straight up audio. We're going to have fun with it like we always do. I haven't cut it into sound bites because I'm not going to presuppose that I have a greater ability to tell what is valuable or viable in this piece than you do. So we'll just start it and stop it, and we'll get as far through it as we possibly can. But I'm not going to monkey with it because, if anything, I have to be honest with you. All right? Oh, I think our interview may be online. Okay, our interview is online for the evening. This is the you know, you'll have this.
Thank you so much.
So I apologize. You know, these things happen. But at any rate, let me lay down the groundwork for the interview for you, so you'll know what we're doing here. We are speaking. We're going to speak after the break with Mr. George Landreth. He's president of Frontiers of Freedom, and it's a public policy foundation that is decidedly oriented toward what is called in this country free market principles. And as such, we're going to discuss net neutrality, I hope, within that framework. We will do that after we come back from a break. This is the Head-On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hi, this is Bruce Birch. Join me for a very special program on Friday, September the 15th. I'll have Mayor Rocky Anderson of Salt Lake City, Utah, and Sam Simpson, who is running in a congressional race in Florida's 10th District, starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Head-On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head-On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Welcome back. 18 and a half minutes after the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Thursday night. We're joined on the phone right now by George Landreth of the Frontiers of Freedom Foundation. Mr. Landreth, are you there?
I am.
Thank you very much for getting back with us. I was beginning to feel like maybe there'd been some sort of terrible misunderstanding, or maybe the left and the right couldn't even talk anymore.
No, I'm always happy to talk. Plus, this is an issue that, in my opinion, isn't really... There's some issues that are fairly divisive as between left and right, and there's, you know, hard, you know, feelings and retractable positions and the thing. This doesn't really strike me as one of these. I mean, it's kind of an interesting issue. You've got some, on the one hand, I think on one side of the issue, you've got Move On, which is definitely on the left, but I think you have the Christian Coalition as well, which I don't, you know, that may be the first and only time they've ever agreed on anything.
Yeah, we don't do a lot of hand-holding with them.
Yeah, and then on the other side, on my side of this issue, you know, you've got groups that, again, are part of the center-right coalition, part of the center-left coalition. So, in my opinion, this is an issue that it doesn't really break out terribly well along left-right coalition kind of lines. You know, some issues do. But
well, the reason I initially made contact was I had a press invitation from one of the people who does PR work for you.
Yeah.
Talking about a press conference, some statements made the other day by Senator Jay Rockefeller here in West Virginia, in southern West Virginia, talking about bringing high-speed internet to rural areas of the state. I live, this studio is in a rural area of the state of West Virginia. So since this is an internet-based radio network, issues of net neutrality and the things that allow me to do my business, I'm very much plugged into this issue.
To be blunt, a lot of our membership is from rural America. The founder of our organization was from Wyoming, a senator from Wyoming who served for 18 years in the U.S. Senate. And so we, to be perfectly blunt, often take, you know, when we look at issues along the digital divide, we look at them from a perspective of, you know, not Boston or Boston, Massachusetts or New York City, where they have plenty of, there isn't a digital divide there, really. I mean, you know, they've got plenty of high-speed internet there. It really is in rural America where they get, in some cases, only dial-up, and in some cases, the dial-up itself is really, really bad. An example, our founder, when he's at his home in Wyoming, can only get dial-up, and he can't get it. The dial-up itself, connection itself, is terrible because the copper wires are such that.
And I think you and I don't know, maybe there's some groundwork here because I'm I tell for the folks who share their time with us on this program that I try to bring a historical perspective as often as I can. Mm-hmm. And being a rural person whose family has been in this general area for about 300 years now, we are impacted, and we have known, and I've heard the stories told about what government has done for people. And the perspective that I have brought or that I was reminded of in this particular debate, Mr. Landreth, is the Rural Electrification Act.
Right.
Back when the power the power companies, the power utilities were first starting up, and they did not want to bring the then high technology of delivered electricity to rural areas, and the federal government said, look, you either do it or we'll go into business against you.
Right.
And the Rural Electrification Act took my family off Delco batteries and brought power wires.
Right. No, I'm not a person who, the government has its role in things. I mean, I think people who argue the government has no role in anything, that would be like arguing there should be no traffic lights. We need some traffic lights. We don't necessarily need them every street corner, but we do need traffic lights at strategic places. And when they're well timed in the right places, they actually increase safety and increase the speed of traffic and the flow of traffic. And so, it's a win-win. And I think the same thing's true. The issue of net neutrality, to me, ultimately, isn't about the rollout of technology, because that, I think, you have the universal provisions in the phone bills that, and the funding and the formulas that are there, and this bill would preserve that, which I think is important for the very reason you describe, which is it's very easy to run high-speed internet, and it's very easy to run telephone wires into a high-rise building, because you run the wire 100 feet and you can, service 1,000 people.
Right.
And you get out in rural areas, of course, and you have to run the wire 1,000 miles to service 1,000 people. So I understand those issues, and I think that's one reason why it's important that the bill has the universality provisions in it. The problem is there are people now holding up this bill and saying, we won't let this bill move forward unless you include with it a net neutrality provisions, which really aren't about the universality of it. And that's what bothers me, because the net neutrality is highly controversial, because it essentially creates almost a government of internet regulation. And they're not the ones that are going to roll out internet technology, mind you. They're just going to dictate how the traffic can flow on the internet. But they won't have anything to do with how much bandwidth you get versus some guy that lives in New York City. That's done in the universality provisions in the areas that provide grants and funding to make sure that rural America there isn't a digital divide. And from my perspective, that's important, because it's like the post office. It's important that the post office deliver everywhere. It wouldn't be helpful if they only said we won't deliver because you're too far down the road. The same thing is true of phone service. The same thing is true ultimately of internet, and the same thing, of course, is true of electricity. So you and I think agree very much there. I don't think we have any
the other thing I think we should examine, Mr. Landreth, there have been a couple at least of competing provisions rolling through Congress.
Correct.
Is there a way to rationally separate out these provisions from one another? I know that there was a fight in a subcommittee, then there was a fight in a committee over whether or not we would include net neutrality provisions. Is this a function of an intransigent Congress?
Well, I think what it really is you've got a couple people. It's not very many. It's a relatively small group of people who are demanding the net neutrality provisions, which again are different than the other provisions, which I think are fairly non-controversial. The reality is, this bill, without the net neutrality, would go through very bipartisan, because it's a win-win. It preserves the universality funding provisions and makes sure that there's going to be the resources to continue rolling out. Just as you pointed out, that has happened before with electricity. It's happened before with phone wire, and now it needs to happen with the higher capacity technologies, because obviously a copper wire is great if all you want to do is talk. But if you're trying to access information, the copper wire technology can be painful.
You've got to get some fiber optic in there.
Exactly. Or some other, in some cases, I'm not trying to pick who wins that debate in terms of the technology. I don't actually care. whether it's fiber optics or whether it's the cable. But my point is it needs to be a high capacity wire. It just
right.
can't be negative, positive copper telephone wire, which doesn't do the trick. I'm not in this to fight for a particular technology. My attitude is the consumer should decide they like best. And if they like cable best, if they like satellite best, if they like fiber optics best, I'm fine with all that. My attitude is if you live in West Virginia, I want you to have those options. The people in New York City do. There's really no reason why competition needs to be brought to everyone, not just the people in the big cities, not just the small hubs around the big cities. But when you get out into rural America, the problem right now for most of them is they don't have any options, and they're held captive, and so they get lousy service, they get charged too much, and it's a function of not having enough competition there, and we need to roll that technology out faster.
Well, what about the fundamental concern, Mr. Landreth, that this will create a lack of net neutrality? And let me preface by saying I already recognize that net neutrality does not exist because, for instance, being a broadcast operation, I have need from time to time to send audio files, which can be several megabytes,
right.
From point A to point B via email. Now, the administrator of Verizon, with whom I do business,
right.
If I go over 6 megabytes, it doesn't go.
Right.
So to that extent, there's already a neck right. on my pipe.
No, that's true, but my suspicion is if you use an FTP program, that you wouldn't have the same problem.
That's true.
It's just a matter of what technology, and that's not so much them trying to dictate how much you can send, but it's a function of the mailbox sizes and all this other stuff, but which I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure net neutrality is going to fix the email attachment size.
No. I don't expect it to. What I was saying was...
No, you're right. There isn't. There's all kinds of rules, but they're not created by government. And I think that's actually a good thing in this case, because what happens is, the example would be, if restaurants were required to provide you with 2 all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, and a sesame seed bun, and that's all you could get, because government said that's what a hamburger is going to be, then all of a sudden you'd have fewer choices, because now everyone, if they're going to sell lunch products, has to sell that. But right now, individual providers make those rules. If you don't like them, you can go elsewhere. Now, the problem for rural America is they don't have as many options, and that's what I think is important about rolling out the new technologies, because then you'll be faced with 3 and 4 different providers. And if one has rules that really don't seem to meet your purposes, you can go to somebody else. And so if you don't like the 2 all-beef patty special sauce, you can go over to somebody else and get a salad or whatever else it is that, you know, kind of turns your crank. And that's, to me, that's the beauty of it, as we need to get away from a one-size-fits-all. And my fear is that if you kind of create a government regulatory regime over the Internet, to me, that's the beauty of the Internet right now, is that ultimately it is an unregulated forum. And so it has protocols that techies understand and observe to make it all work. But from your and my perspective, I don't. Maybe you're a techie, but
not
I
much
enjoy the
one.
Internet. But I'm not a. I don't program web pages.
Well, one of the primary fears on my side of this discussion is what I describe as a ghettoized Internet.
Mm-hmm.
One where the Internet service providers are able to dictate tiers, if you will, of content. And it is I think there's a certain amount of legitimacy to this discussion, because I don't trust the free market enough to think that if, for instance, Bell South decides to create a tiered Internet within their service area, that every other one won't go along with it.
No, they might. But I think the pressures would go the other way, because I think there'd be kickback from that. Just as an example, I think you see people like AOL. AOL you can only use their email, and they had all these kind of rules as to their service, and they've had to back off on those because consumers basically said enough, we don't like that. So I think my sense of it is, as long as you have competition, the risk for rural America today is that without insufficient competition, if there's one provider, then of course you're right, because as a monopolist, effectively speaking, they can set the rules and it's lump it or leave it, because it's either accept our Internet, which may have a lot of goofy rules and poor service, or get no Internet. But that, I think you solve that problem by making sure that there's a robust competition and lots of providers and lots of different technologies. Then the consumer can find the services that suit their purposes. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why you've probably seen AOL, not to pick on them, but I think they've...
No, they deserve it. They've earned it.
Yeah, well, But my point is they've made some, I think, poor market choices, and consumers have said, ah, we don't like that. And I think that makes the consumers powerful. When consumers aren't powerful is when they don't have choices. In other words, if you're in a town and all there is McDonald's, then you're not powerful. If you're in a town and there's 20 different restaurants, then all of a sudden you can vote with your dollars and eat where you want to eat and get the kind of food you want to get. And that's what I guess I'm trying to get at is those provisions of the bill, which have the broad bipartisan support, would achieve that. That's what really is going to help rural America. Having some government agency that kind of tells Internet providers how they have to administer the Internet, I'm not convinced does near as much for them.
I don't want an FCC of the Internet, Mr.
Landry.
Well,
that's what I'm getting at. Both that and also, quite frankly, just the technological side of it. I'm not sure I want a bunch of techies, you know, government techies telling people how the Internet has to be administered to run, because ultimately that's, I think, the beauty of it is that it is this kind of unregulated forum that you put your website out there, and if it's a stinky website and no one likes it, then you and your uncle can look at it. And if, you know, but if it's a really great website and it's funny. I mean, who would have ever, you look at Drudge's website, it gets tons of hits, but it's not really a glitzy website. It's just,
no.
It's just black and white. But, you know, but my point is you find your niche and you make your, and people will find merit in what you do or they won't. I just feel much more comfortable with that because my fear is, as I think you've aptly suggested with the FCC, is if the FCC has the right to, and they probably already do much of this, but if they certainly did a lot more of it, then they could be dictating what news is appropriate to be broadcast. And my response is, CBS News needs to decide what CBS News is going to provide. It doesn't need to be the government. And it'd be a big mistake. And same thing with your show. You've invited me on, but the truth of the matter is you don't have to invite me on. You have a right to invite on who you want to. And I appreciate that you gave me the chance, but I don't want a government telling you have to. And I think, in general, that's the part of the net neutrality that scares me. The provisions that increase competition, that roll out new technology, particularly in rural America, I wholeheartedly endorse. And interestingly, those are the ones that have broad bipartisan support. If they were voted on without the net neutrality provisions, they would pass overwhelmingly. It wouldn't just, I don't mean bipartisan like 60%. I mean bipartisan like 85-90%.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually no votes. But which tells me that it's self-evidently a good idea.
Let me take the other side of that coin, and I think you and I are in complete agreement. The last thing I want is a bureaucracy that's regulating my content or the number of people who can listen. You know, the market takes care of that. If I want to reach a million listeners, I'm going to have to provide capacity to stream to a million listeners, and that's going to cost X amount of dollars. And that is as it stands now. I don't want, I expect to have to deal with that because this is really boots on the ground freedom as far as I'm concerned, the Internet.
Right.
On the other hand, however, I am loath to place a great deal of trust in corporate America.
I don't disagree with you there. I think their incentive, you're dead on. The incentive of corporate America isn't to spend a boatload of money running high-speed Internet and fiber-optic cable down some rural country road and service the three people that live on it. I understand that. But that's why it has the universality provisions that provide for government funding and grants to lay that, kind of like a road. The idea is we need roads all across America. We don't just need roads in New York City and Washington, D.C. We need them in Topeka, Kansas, and everywhere in between, if for no other reason than so we can conduct commerce.
Well, is it the absence of that universal
Internet? So you and I don't disagree there either. I'm not suggesting to you that the marketplace will necessarily do it. What I want to do is create the infrastructure so that there is the high-speed Internet access, have lots of competitors, so that you then have not just one or two options, but hopefully three and four and five options, and all of them are pretty good options, and you get to pick the best of those that meets your needs because you'll define best as you need it. May define it differently, and that's okay.
Is there a place in that universality structure and within those funding procedures for some level of recourse on the part of consumers, Mr. Landreth? Just by example, this is very close to home for us. The IT professional for the Head On Radio Network lives in a very rural area of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He has been promised, and I hope he will forgive me for airing his internet laundry. He has been promised high-speed internet by Sprint for something going on 4 years now.
Right.
It has never happened. And, yeah, he lives down one of those roads that you were just talking about.
Right.
Is there a reasonable halfway point for him to have recourse to say, you know, this is ridiculous?
The universality provisions, as I understand them now, obviously they can change very rapidly. I mean, you know, someone in the committee can take a pen to them, and all of a sudden I'm talking about yesterday's version. But it is a funding mechanism that creates a funding source from charging phone users and internet users, all of the, you know, so this is like the phone system, basically, which is when you pay your phone bill, every American pays $1.10 or something, you know, relatively small sum of money that is used in a pot plus some general funds from the Treasury to fund telephone projects aimed at rural America, to fund the infrastructure, not to subsidize your monthly phone bill, but just to make sure that you have the technology, because that's the real investment. The investment, essentially, that's prohibitive is laying the wire the first time. Once the wire is laid, running a signal through, it's not that big a deal.
Well, once the wire is laid, then the wire's carrying money.
Exactly. And so the point, I guess, is the program is designed, though, to build the infrastructure. It's a little bit like building a highway. Once you've built the highway, sure, there's some maintenance to the highway, but the real money is in pouring the concrete and laying the asphalt and painting the stripes.
Okay, one other issue, Mr. Landreth. We found out through, the companies that are being quite successful right now, it appear, like Vonage, that they've sort of pulled the curtain back on the wizard within the telecom industry and pointed out the fact that high long distance bills, for instance, are not so much a function of internal cost, but of price setting within the telecom industry itself. And one of the things that we're seeing and experiencing with a number of companies is they, for instance, and I'll name names here, I don't have a problem, Comcast, the largest cable provider in the United States, rolled out its own voice over internet protocol telephony in March. Since that time, there have been the complaints have been legion about from Comcast users who had and it seems pretty verifiable by them had jitter imposed into their line that cripples their ability to use some other competing voice over internet telephony.
Yeah, and that's an example where they I'm of the opinion, and I think there are a number of people on the Hill without going the net neutrality provision, are certainly prepared to prohibit internet providers from doing things to the signal that means you have to use their service and you can't use other services, because that's effectively an anti-competitive practice.
Well, it's monopolistic and it's contrary to any kind of free market principle, isn't it?
I agree with you, but that's a problem we already actually have statutory fixes for, and net neutrality, I think, while it might be clumsily get at that issue, it's not clear to me it would, and it has the other risks we've already talked about. But I wholeheartedly agree with you. To the extent that internet providers, by virtue, example, whether it's them or whether it's fiber optics, could be the phone company with their fiber optic cable, they ought not be able. They can certainly give you advantageous pricing if you want to buy a package deal from them. I have no problem with that if they want to. But the moment they begin to basically do things with the system that prevent you from using competing services simply because you get your internet from them, that strikes me as anti-competitive. That's substantially more anti-competitive than anything that was ever done by Microsoft.
Well, I think, yes, absolutely. So then does there not need to be some means of complaint and of redress? You say there's already a statutory fix in there.
We have lots of statutes.
It's ineffective.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, utilities are either monopolies or quasi-monopolies, and for them to then use that monopoly power to coerce you into purchasing other services from them, obviously McDonald's couldn't do this, but the fact is if you and I went to McDonald's to buy a sandwich, we don't have to buy our drink there. We could then, you know, drive across the street and buy our drink somewhere else. But if McDonald's had a mechanism that the second you purchased a drink from someone else, it became poisonous because you didn't buy their drink.
Right.
That would not be permissible. And that's the problem, in my opinion. And we have laws that regulate those sort of things currently. And what needs to happen is quite frankly, is the utility regulatory regime needs to crack down and say, you know, stop and desist immediately. In fact, probably needs to refund some money to consumers. And they probably would. You wouldn't even have to have an antitrust lawsuit because they're a regulated industry.
Well, okay, first of all, let's talk about bill numbers. Or not first of all, we're a little late for that. Mm-hmm. But, Mr. Landreth, bill numbers. What the bill that you favor, in the form that you favor, can you give us a reference to that and sponsors?
I can in a second. I'm sitting here at my desk. I'll have to grab some stuff. I've been kind of enjoying the conversation with you so much that
I'm having a blast. I want you to know.
So I apologize, but I'm the kind of person who I don't even memorize my own cell phone number because I can put it in my in memory of things, and then I don't have to clutter my memory with it. So.
Yeah, you're trying to save your own hard drive space.
Exactly. So anyhow,
the one inside your skull.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. So let me pull it up here. I can do it in a minute. Let's pick up some other issues.
Okay.
And I'll
sure.
Get back to that.
I keep coming back to the, like I said, I don't want an internet FCC, and I don't want an internet Michael Powell telling me that I can't say booger on the air. But the fact is, you know, we've got public service commissions that are notoriously, well, I can't speak for every single of the 50 states, but instances in which getting some level of relief is almost impossible. You know, it's one of those justice delayed is justice denied kind of issues. When you experience some sort of predatory practice coming to you from an internet service provider, or you know when you find out, say, this business, for instance, and they say, well, you know, you're serving too many people, you're going to have to buy more, you're going to pay a higher price. Is there not room in any of this for providing some sort of swift redress?
Well, absolutely. I don't disagree that, it depends on the nature, I guess. If, for example, if somebody, if I had a piece of property and somebody wanted to take a road across my property just so they could drive to their property, I would feel very differently about that than I would, for example, if they had a rock quarry on the side and what they wanted to do was run, you know, a couple dozen pickup trucks dump trucks every hour across my property. I'd feel differently. So in terms of, you know, if they charge you differently just based on the quantity or the volume, that doesn't concern me. But if what they basically do is, irrespective of that, they do other things, then that would concern me and make me kind of nervous, because I'm of the opinion that we need to have maximum freedom on the Internet. That's one of the things I like about it. It's a forum for ideas, and you don't have your ideas and my ideas don't get shut off because we don't, you know, somehow meet in that boring, you know, sometimes fudgy area where people don't actually have any opinions at all.
It's squishy.
Yeah, but you know, and I think that's one of the good things about it. But at the same time, I'm not at all concerned. You know, like I start off by saying, I don't believe that there's no role for government to play. I mean, I know some conservatives kind of have that attitude, but I use the analogy of the stop sign and the stop lights. We need some stop signs and we need some stoplights, and if they're put in the right places and timed correctly, they're a big help to us all. And if they're at every single street corner, at every single driveway, of course they become a nightmare. And, you know, so it's the question is in finding the right, you know, the right mechanism, the right balance. It's not a question of should government play a role. It's just kind of what role and how much and finding the right balance.
And you are, I imagine, naturally distrustful of creating any new administrative agency or any new administrative function based on government's self-perpetuating nature and tendency expand.
I am particularly, partly because it expands and partly because administrative agencies often are not responsive to anybody. Whereas, if a corporation is behaving badly and they're prosecuted, you have all kinds of things that can deal with that. You have a court, you have judges, there's checks and balances, is my point. One of my concerns about administrative agencies is they often are judge, jury, and prosecutor, and so they can pick their pet projects and do things, and then other times they leave glaring things unresolved, and you kind of scratch your head and go, who's in charge over there, and why did they make that choice? My sense is that's just kind of the nature of bureaucracy, is that they become myopic and they get consumed with whatever consumes them, and that may or may not be what consumes you and me. And so
Well, one of the things I fear, Mr. Landreth, is, you know, you talk about redress to the courts and things like that, which I wholeheartedly support. Unfortunately, and I'm not throwing rocks, please understand, but there are people within your, or not your, but within the conservative movement who tend to the belief that every time a consumer files a lawsuit, that somehow he is abusing poor little bedraggled corporate America. We've had a lot of limitations on consumer ability. We saw it here in West Virginia. Our right to sue insurance companies was taken away from us.
Well, I mean, and there are, I will be the first to admit, there are certainly abusive lawsuits, but that is not to say that all lawsuits are abusive. I'm an attorney by trade, so I feel like I have a pretty good handle on that. I've sat in courtrooms where, and I've seen cases where, the person being sued was sued simply because they happen to be somewhere nearby whatever happened that happened, and they have insurance.
Or, moreover, they happen to be nearby the money. I understand that.
Yeah, and that's always unfortunate because they get dragged through it. And the reason why the example was one time there was a truck driver that was driving a big old Mack truck, and he was drunk as a skunk, and he fell asleep at the wheel on top of that, and he ran right through the back of a family at a stop sign, and the car burst into flames and everything. He was doing like 60 miles an hour, never hit his brake, never knew what happened. Well, he didn't have any insurance, and the truck wasn't his, and it was destroyed anyhow, I guess, in the flame or whatever. And so they sued GM, and the theory of suing GM was that the car was defective. And the question, of course, is what car do you know of that can withstand being hit at 60 miles an hour by a Mack truck? And would you want to drive something?
And it was some sort of crashworthiness theory, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. But my point, it'd be different if it blew up when someone bumped in the back of them in a parking lot.
Yeah, like a Pinto.
Right, but come on, this is a 18-wheel truck hit it at 60 miles an hour.
We're very familiar with those kinds of accidents around here.
And I guess my point is that's the kind of suit that at least I object to. But the reality is there are legitimate suits out there, and the courts exist, in my opinion, to resolve those disputes. But I don't mean to just say that. Fortunately, one of the powers we have over monopolists and utilities is that we have the ability to monitor them through the regulatory regime. The regulatory regime is essentially there to try to mimic what we might get if we had competition. When you only have one provider, of course, you have to then make sure they don't charge too much. You know, in competition, we don't have to worry about whether McDonald's charge too much, because if they charge too much, we'll buy more Whoppers or we'll buy more Wendy's singles or whatever.
Yeah, well, you mentioned
but
this idea
when
of
competition. You need someone in town to kind of say, "I'm sorry, you're charging too much there."
Well, whenever there's one restaurant in town, the food is, like you said, generally bad. You get two restaurants, the quality goes up in both places. I'm completely on board with that because we use that very analogy to describe what we're doing here on the Head On Radio Network.
Exactly, and that's the beauty, I think, of even the marketplace of ideas is ultimately. It is that you're right. It's about competition and good ideas and good discussion. Like right now, to me, we're having a very substantive conversation. My sense is we don't agree a lot. We come at it from different perspectives. It sounds to me like we agree on an awful lot. We have some, we may have some modest differences, but nothing that, the kind of thing where you have to hate each other.
Well, I think
but that's useful, and this is an interesting conversation.
Well, it sounds to me like you're not out there shilling for the telecoms. If you are, you are better at your craft than most anybody I've spoken to lately.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not particularly worried about the telecoms. They make plenty of money, and they don't need me shilling for them, quite frankly. And if I shill for them, then doing it far too cheaply.
Yeah, and I don't do that to insult you. I hope you understand that.
No, I understand that. We're a small think tank, and I could probably use with whatever it is that Shillers get, but I don't have any of that here.
Well, but one of the things I think about is, you talk about this means whereby American consumers and via the government can help expand the infrastructure to provide meaningful broadband access to rural areas, or we've got a listener in the chat room who lives in Boston who just said, I've got DSL, people around the block can't get it.
Yeah, no, that's true, and it's but rural, and he's right. There are some areas that don't have as good a service, but the reality is, and I don't mean to be insensitive to him, but the truth is, if you live in a city on the East Coast or on the West Coast, that's a big city, your options are far, far superior, and you probably can attest that I'm not just making this up.
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. You can see the list of the
places. They don't have some issues.
No,
I don't mean to suggest they have no problems.
It seems to me that within this idea, and I know my friends on the left are going to scream corporate welfare at the notion of subsidizing in any fashion the expansion of broadband services via surcharges or anything like that.
Right.
But I also see a situation where, and I don't know how you do it, whether through through legislation or through a regulatory scheme, where these companies are going to go hammer and tongs at each other trying to get at the money.
No, you're exactly right. That's the issue ultimately, is once the, and I think that's one of the reasons why the government will continue to play a role in this, is because, quite frankly, once it helps fund some of this backbone infrastructure going in, it's unlikely just to say, fine, now that we've put that backbone structure in, we're going to let you do whatever you want. I think the point is they'll probably, when they've helped do that, they'll require their to allow.
Well,
for
so
example,
to go to the example,
competition. Like they did the phone example is phone lines. Government helped build the phone lines.
But you got one phone company
at
that time.
Now what they're requiring, what they've required with the new bill is that those companies have to make available to competitors their phone lines at reasonable prices. In other words, they can't price them out. They have to basically, if you want to start your own small phone company and you'd say, yeah, but I don't own any phone lines, it wouldn't matter because you'd have the right to lease at rates that are reviewed by the government and determined to be reflective of their actual cost, those things. And so, like right now at our office, we have a we're in the Verizon service area, but our service provider is a small third-party company that basically rents space from Verizon and then beats them on service and pricing.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of that around here. So to take my example of our friend, our IT professional, in subsidizing this kind of thing, in order to provide choice, you know, and not a Hobson's choice, you know, the horse by the door, or no horse at all.
Right.
In order to provide a meaningful choice, are you suggesting a scenario where you would try to make it possible for more than one form of connectivity to come down that lonesome country road?
Well, the goal, I think, ultimately would be, it may not be efficient to have 47 different fiber going down that, but what you can do, like on the phone company end, is you can have that pipe be available to more than one company and have more than one company be in a position to offer its service over that. We even know that with natural gas now, it was thought at one point that was not possible. You know, the old model was you had to have one natural gas company because you couldn't have multiple sets of pipes running down the street and then going to each house. But they've basically figured out how now to have each gas company pump into the system the right number of, you know, cubic feet of natural gas, and whether you get the cubic feet they pumped in for you or somebody else's, it doesn't matter as long as
you can let the accountants sort it out.
The accountants can sort that out, but the fact is then you can, so now today I can even buy my natural gas from like five different people or five different companies and different pricing schemes and different guaranteed prices, etc., even though there's only one set of pipes running down under the ground in front of my house and up to my house. And I think that's the same model. And you see that same model used now with telephone services, and I think that's what we will see with the Internet as well in terms of the broadband services. That's why government regulation, though, would need to be there, because obviously with natural gas, they can't prevent me from buying gas from another company by some sort of filter they put on the pipes. But you can do that with technology.
Is there some means by which...
make sure that doesn't occur, because they shouldn't be in a position to coerce you into using their service.
Is there some means by which the Internet service providers could be, I don't know, compelled towards some sort of showing of good faith in terms of what they would do as far as pricing dynamics, market dynamics, not messing with something that is already... See, that's the thing. A lot of us... and I think you do. You know, you've already said the Internet is great as it stands. You don't want to break it with all of this.
Right. What we want to do is expand it. We want to make it more available to people, but we don't want to screw with it in a negative way. What we really want to do is make sure that more people can get to it quicker.
And so I guess what I'm saying is, would it be reasonable to expect the Internet service providers to give some sort of a showing of good faith that they didn't want to break it either?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that in principle. I'm just not sure how we do that. I know that I take some solace in looking at how it's worked in areas that are not quite rural, a little bit rural maybe, but not super rural. Example is you drive outside of Washington D.C. You probably know it, being from West Virginia. You drive out on 50, and you don't have, you know, you're not, you get into, you know, Western Fairfax County and into Loudoun County, and it's becoming more rural. It's first suburban, and then it starts getting a rural flavor. You start seeing, you know, a lot more fences and horses and things like that.
Right.
And what you see is that those people are just now beginning to get some of these broadband technologies rolled out. For example, just last, oh, maybe the last 5 months, they came in and buried underneath the, you know, yard out in front of our place the fiber optic cable. And so my sense is that what we're seeing is it is getting rolled out. My sense is that I don't view corporations as evil. I just view them as self-interested.
Well, yeah.
Which at times is a
some are evil, some aren't. But they are all self-interested.
I don't view them as inherently evil. That's my point. They're inherently self-interested, like all of us are. And so they don't fail to serve rural America because they're evil. They fail to serve rural America because, to some degree, it doesn't pay them to. And so we have to. That's a market weakness because we've determined we would like to see there be this universality principle that matters to us. It's part of being connected.
What about the very nature of bandwidth itself? I've got listeners in other countries, and I hear from them about the fact that what we define as broadband right now is laughably slow in the rest of the world.
In some places, that's true. That's not true everywhere. I mean, I've been in the Middle East and in Europe, and it depends. Certainly, the fiber optics is top notch technology. But I would agree that DSL is. That's what I used to have at my house when the fiber optics cable came in, and it was not bad. But it really is. It's a remarkable technology in that they take copper wires and they do something fantastic with them to make them actually do something a little faster. But the reality is, it's a little bit like taking an old Ford Pinto and turning it into a decent race car. But it's still a Ford Pinto, and you have to respect the guy who was able to do the engineering to convert it and make it into a decent race car. But the fact of the matter is, it ain't Formula One.
Well, I don't want the Internet service providers to hold themselves back. I want the technology to continue to grow and go forward, as opposed to, for instance, that self-interested cost concern keeping that from happening.
I agree with that. That's absolutely important. I mean, as I view it, one of the things, and that's why I believe the big boon, the people who will benefit the most from broadband rolling out will ultimately be the people in rural America. And for this reason, one, they're the ones that have the least of it right now. And so if more of it's rolled out, they'll be disproportionately the beneficiaries. But also, quite frankly, the Internet is a great equalizer in terms of location. It used to be everyone said, location, 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 which was code for being close to Washington, close to Boston, close to New York, or in those cities. But now, because of the Internet, both in terms of marketing, as you know, and in doing your radio show, in terms of sales and all kinds of things, even just in terms of education, you don't have to be near a big library anymore. You don't have to spend, even like a law firm. Example is, I used to be with a very big law firm, a very large, prestigious law firm. I had this fantastic law library, and it was kind of the pride and joy of the firm. Well, I'm old enough that there wasn't really much of an Internet when I first became a lawyer. There was some online services, but the Internet really didn't exist, at least as far as I knew. It didn't come out until really the 90s.
Yeah, Usenet, that kind of thing.
But as a practical matter, today you can be a one-man law firm in the middle of nowhere, and if you've got a decent Internet connection, you have access to the best law libraries on the planet.
Yeah, through.
And so that's what I guess I'm getting at, is who does that benefit? Does that benefit the guy who's across the street from the big law library in Washington, or the guy that's out in the middle of nowhere? And the answer is disproportionately the guy.
There's no way to have any debate on that.
Yeah, and so that's why to me I'm excited about the rollout of technology, because as someone who's concerned about rural America, my attitude is this is something we need to hasten. We need to do it quickly. And we need to make sure that the regulatory regimes we create don't slow it down or encumber it in any way. Because part of the reason the Internet has grown so dramatically, and even computers, I mean, just think, if you think about this, we sent an Apollo mission to space, landed on the moon, and came back.
With something less than a Commodore 64.
Yeah. Essentially, my Treo probably has as much computing power as their main computer did. If you think about it, it's just stunning to me.
Yeah.
You know, that you and I can hold cell phones that have more computing power, memory, more processing power, we can fit in our shirt pocket now. That part of, that didn't occur because government regulated us there. That came because, in all honesty, I think government created a system that allowed entrepreneurial things to happen. But if government had kind of said, this is how cell phones have to be, and this is what they have to do, and this is what they have to look like, my guess is we'd all be still talking on those box phones. You know,
I remember them.
You know what I mean? Sure. Again, not to be critical, but government. You know, the example is, do you get better service in the DMV or the post office or when you go to the local mall? And there's a reason for that, and that's all I'm getting at is.
Well, I understand that,
be careful not to kind of view it as the panacea either. It has its strengths, it has its weaknesses. Let's capitalize on its strengths, and let's not embrace its weaknesses.
I tend to share a lot of that. I think I come at it from about 180 degrees from where you are. I've taken a bunch of your time, and we've got to roll on. But
okay.
Do you have the bill?
I do. I found that for you, and my screen just went to sleep, so I'm now typing in my password and opening it.
Okay.
The bill, there's a House version bill, which is 5252. It's called the Communications Opportunity Promotion
yeah.
and Enhancement Act, which I never
Cope.
Pay much attention to those because, you know, they're always designed to make it sound good.
Yeah.
But it's actually a pretty good bill. It's called COPE.
Yeah, I think they should just rename every bill in the Republican Congress, Please Jesus Reelect Us.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. This one actually has pretty broad bipartisan support. It was it wasn't just one or two folks.
Now, what about in the Senate?
On the Senate side, the bill is, let me pull that one up here. It is a similar kind of name or whatever, but it's you know how they always are. They're similar names, but they don't say anything. It's very funny to me how they do that. But
yeah,
it's called the Consumers Choice and Broadband Deployment Act, and I don't rely a lot on names because my
right.
And it's 2686 by the way, Senate
S-2686.
Yeah, and by the way, that bill is actually Senator Inouye, who's a Democrat of no small renown. I mean, he's not a nominal Democrat. He's a pretty significant Democrat. He helped write this bill. So that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's a not trying to pawn off a
right.
kind of a
yeah, my main concern, I have no trust for this Congress whatsoever, Mr. Landreth.
Well, to be honest, I don't think that Republicans necessarily feel any different than that.
Okay.
My guess is that that's the one.
I'm afraid that I'm going to wake up one morning and find out that this thing's been rolled into the Internet for Iraq bill. And I'm going to find out that we've sent $18 billion to give broadband in the Joff.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily disagree with your general question about what's going on. I think in general the Congress has become extremely partisan, and they kind of do, I think, a lot of very, and it's on both sides in my opinion. I kind of say a pox on both of them, but the reality is I'm not a, you know, if you were to ask me what's my general sense there, I would kind of go, yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm fairly, at this point, cynical about what's going on in Washington.
Well, I do appreciate your time, Mr. Landreth. I hope there's a line at the end of Henry V where he talks about the period in which England controlled France. And the chorus says, and the managing of it was given to so many that they broke it all to pieces. And my fear here is that people on the right side of this issue and people on the left side of this issue, I'm not much of a centrist, but my concern is that we've got something that works, and I don't want it broken. I want people to have greater access. To that extent, you know, I want those rural addresses to get service and be able, you know, children, a child raised without internet access right now, and I'm not talking about the dirty part of the internet, a child raised without internet access right now is educationally behind his peers.
Oh, I agree with that. I mean, I understand there's things on the internet I don't want my kids to see, and I have a filter for that. But
that's my job as a parent.
Exactly. As a parent, that's my responsibility to figure out. But I don't view that as the government's job, and quite frankly, that's not a reason to hate the internet. it's kind of like, you know, dynamite can be used to blow people up. It can be used to build highways and do good things.
Yeah, I hate censorship. I don't want anybody telling me what I can see, what I can't see. There's harrowing legislation out there that the Congress is considering right now with regard to so-called images of children on the internet that are, and it's gonna, and somewhere along the way somebody's gonna get to make a call as to whether or not it's pornographic. And the next thing you know, we can't see pictures of blown up children in Iraq anymore. And it has real ugly implications for freedom of speech, freedom of expression, and real journalism.
No, I agree with that. I think you have to be very careful. I mean, I'm not worried about, you know, my sense is, I don't know, that's probably a different topic, but the truth is there is kind of true child pornography, which is the exploitation of children, which to me seems inappropriate.
Yeah, well, it is.
Yeah, but by the same token, people can sweep into that all kinds of things, which could be, you know, who knows? I mean, I have pictures of our newborn baby being bathed. You know, is that pornography? I don't.
Well, and see, and that's the thing.
You know, and so obviously there needs to be a level of. I mean, I always feel like, you know, I can tell what pornography is, and pornography.
You, me, and the Supreme Court.
Pardon me?
You, me, and the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Right, exactly, and I know that sounds dumb, but it's really true. You know, my guess is that that's true for most Americans. It's hard to define it, but the truth is we all know pornography when we see it. And on the other hand, there's things that might be a little, you know, that aren't our cup of tea, but just because it's not our cup of tea doesn't make it, you know, pornography. And I think that's,
yeah.
So I agree with you. We have to
so, you know, I just want to make sure that we don't tear this all to pieces.
I agree, but of course this bill doesn't deal with any of those issues.
No. I understand that. It's the will to go and monkey with things.
Right. No,
I want to expand access. I want to create more responsive internet service providers.
Right. And what you just described is why I don't want a government a secretary of internet regulation. Because regulators will, you know, like the FCC, will be looking for something to do.
Yeah.
To justify their budget and their personnel and their existence. And my sense is that's going to work more mischief than good.
Well, I tend to agree with you on that front. Mr. Landreth, I've enjoyed our conversation.
Good to talk with you.
I hope sometime we'll, you know, I can't remember his name now, but I had a marvelous anti-war conversation with somebody from your organization one evening. And I thought we were going to go hammer and tongs at each other like we were told that it has to be in America now.
Yeah.
We didn't.
Okay.
We had a very reasonable conversation, as this one has been, and I wish you the very best, sir.
Well, thank you. It's been good to be with you. I appreciate the chance.
My pleasure. Take care.
Alrighty.
George Landreth with the Frontiers of Freedom Foundation. I will not advocate. Giving carte blanche to internet service providers. I can't do that. I won't do that. I don't believe in that. Look, do you get carte blanche for anything? No, you don't. And so I don't think we need to give that to someone of massively more power and influence. On the other hand, I don't want it broken. And we have, like it or no, and we find ourselves in an odd little position as liberals, as progressives, as people of the left. We have a government that I would not trust in an outhouse with a muzzle on. And I don't, maybe after we get a Democratic majority. Maybe then, but not now. But go and read the bill. Share your thoughts. We're going to come back after some news. We're a little late getting to it. But I thought you would at least enjoy that discussion. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
News Network. Republican senators who opposed President Bush's plans for tougher interrogation and trials of terror suspects have reached an agreement with the White House on the issue. Arizona Senator John McCain said the compromise preserves the, quote, integrity and letter and spirit of the Geneva Convention. In New York today, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad told a news conference that his country does not need a nuclear bomb and suggested that the U.S. dismantle its own nuclear arsenal. In Washington, Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf told 60 Minutes that then-Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage threatened to bomb Pakistan back to the Stone Age if it did not join in the fight against terrorism. Armitage also allegedly demanded that Pakistan give the U.S. military control over its border posts and bases. In Geneva, a UN expert says torture in Iraq may now be worse than it was under Saddam Hussein. A new report indicates that militias, terrorist groups, and government forces are not treating prisoners humanely. In Washington, the reaction to Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez's speech yesterday at the UN General Assembly continues. Several Democrats have criticized his remarks, which included calling President Bush the devil. On Capitol Hill today, the House reached a tentative deal about prescription drugs. It would relax a ban on importing 90-day supplies of medications from Canada, where they can be purchased much more cheaply. In Washington, officials say HIV testing should be routine for everyone between the ages of 13 and 64, not just for those who are at high risk of contracting the virus that causes AIDS. The latest New York Times, CBS News poll reveals that 77% of respondents believe most members of Congress have not done a good enough job to be reelected. Only 25% approve the way Congress is doing its job. These poll results come 7 weeks until midterm elections. In that same poll, President Bush's job approval rating stands at 37%. A new LA Times Bloomberg poll has the president's approval at 44%, the highest level since January. In Indonesia, three Christian militants were executed today, found guilty of gun and machete attack on a school. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The Space Shuttle Atlantis landed in Cape Canaveral this morning, ending its 12-day voyage 1 day later than expected. Health officials have narrowed down the source of the E. coli bacteria to Monterey, Santa Clara, and San Benito counties, but investigators are still trying to figure out what caused it, anything from water to a breakdown in the packaging plant to improper refrigeration. Forbes magazine has released its yearly ranking of the 400 richest people in the U.S., and for the first time, that list consists only of people worth $1 billion or more. Hewlett-Packard claims that it's not stonewalling in the Media Leaks scandal investigation, a claim California's attorney general made earlier. A House subcommittee will hold a hearing on the matter next week. Walmart is starting a test program in Tampa to sell 30-day supplies of generic drugs for $4. The test will be extended to the entire state of Florida by January. Freddie Mac reports that the average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage has dropped to 6.4%, its lowest level in 6 months. The IRS says that the tax credit for people who buy Toyota or Lexus hybrid vehicles will be cut in half starting October 1st. Light sweet crude settling at $61.59 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow down 80 points, NASDAQ down 15, S&P 500 down 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis. It's now 5.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back. I've had a little breather. Now, I want to share something with you. This is the way it was put to me in pitching the conversation that we just had. Senator Rockefeller and other leaders gathered in southern West Virginia to talk about bringing high-speed internet to rural areas of the state. Unfortunately, they didn't discuss a major obstacle to this reality, namely a proposal in Congress barring phone companies from charging the big internet providers, that would be BIP, charging the BIPs, Yahoo, AOL, eBay, Amazon, a fee or toll for the right to run their massive amount of content through the phone lines. I think that's just stupid hooey. If they want, I mean, if there is a if it is a demonstrated fact, and it appears to be, if you read the CEO of Verizon's and various other telecom and cable executives' remarks, that they do want to do that. They, you know, Yahoo, eBay, Google, they've got a good thing going, and these rather dinosauric, backward-looking companies want in on it. That's why that's why long distance bills used to be what they were. Okay, the phone companies argue this legislation, known as the Net Neutrality Bill, would impair their ability to wire rural America for high speed internet, since it will cost hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars to do so. They are two separate issues. I think Mr. Landreth and I are on the same page in suggesting that people need internet access around this country. That is the starting point of the discussion. How we get there is another issue. Because if you go back, I started out with the example of the Rural Electrification Act, and that was an so-called activist, you know, Democratic government that said, you know, look, either you start stringing electric wires, and we'll make sure that you get a fair rate for the service you provide, the utility you provide. Either you start stringing it, or we're going in business against you. Maybe if we had a responsive government, maybe that is the answer here. Tell the big telecoms and the big cable companies to start stringing the damn wire, or the government will do it for them and take a significant portion of their market share away. Now, I'm sure that would make free marketeers just scream. But it did work with the Rural Electrification Act. Let's go to the phones. Peter joins us from Tallahassee. Peter, I apologize for making an example of you. I hope you will forgive me.
Dude, I was all interested in it. You know, I was a DJ in dance clubs for many years.
Yes.
Robert, and I have seen a lot of people dance. But let me tell you, that man was doing some moves I have never seen before. He, one thing you could say about him is he could damn well dance. That had more non sequiturs in it than any conversation I have ever heard in my entire life.
Well, if I did poorly, I apologize.
No, not your non sequiturs. You were right on target. The questions you asked were perfectly valid, good questions. However, the answers were all over the map. They almost made sense. Almost, but not quite. And you're right. The last thing you were saying just before you kicked me into the show were absolutely correct. They are in many ways two different issues. In many ways, and you know, if it weren't for the Rural Electric Association, you know, I'd still be lighting the house with a kerosene lamp.
They're Delco batteries.
Exactly.
Sure.
And you know, there's a city not far from here, Thomasville, Georgia. It's in South Georgia, right on the Georgia line. It's only 30 miles.
Know it well.
Okay, so Thomasville got into this before all the phone companies and cable companies started whining about if a municipality began to distribute high-speed internet service to their communities, that would be the government competing with private business. Well, anyway, they got into the wire. And let me tell you, every freaking little burg 30, 40, 50 miles away from Thomasville, Georgia, is completely wired with broadband. And I'm not talking about 256K broadband. I mean, you know, for the United States, the real deal, you know, 6-7 megabyte speed, which is a joke compared to places like Japan, where they take 100 megabits for granted.
Yeah.
At a fraction of the cost.
Well, see, and that's the thing, Peter. I do. If I was, you know, if I was the head of Great Big Internet Service Provider of America company, I would see little cost benefit to stringing 3,000 feet of wire to serve two customers as opposed to stringing 3,000 feet of wire to serve 50,000.
Bob, we are 17th in the world. We're the 17th that we rank 17th as a nation in DSL deployment. And we wonder why.
Well, is that because we haven't had enough corporate welfare?
Well, gee, do you think? Could that possibly be it? The phone companies are making money hand over fist. Bob, here's what it comes down to. They have never gotten over the fact that I can dial up a local number with my computer. Now, I'm still on dial-up. I think everybody pretty much knows that. I live on the other side of the digital divide.
But we love you anyway.
But, yes, you love me anyway, and God knows I appreciate it. But I can make a local phone call with my computer and talk with people and listen to things all over the world. In other words, they can't charge me long distance. That still has them upset, and that's what the problem is. And here's what they want to do. I don't know if you've ever used a PC card. It's a little card plugs into one of your slots on a laptop. And what it is
I got one.
It's a cell phone, right? And it doesn't have a dialer on it. That's all done with your software. But it plugs in, and what it does is it connects your laptop to the nearest cell phone tower to get the internet via your cell phone.
Okay, I don't have one of those, but I know exactly what you're talking
right.
about.
Right. Now, here's the way they do that. They charge you, there are various rates and packages you can get. But
$59.99 a month from Verizon if it only worked here.
Right. And we don't have a cell phone tower out here either. To top that off, I'd buy an adapter and use one of those on my machine. But the thing is that they charge you by how many megabytes you use per month. So if you're a casual user and you go on to go to Yahoo and get the current news and check the weather, you can get their low-end service, which you get, like, I don't remember the exact, 10 megabytes. You can't download more than 10 megabytes per month. Or they start charging you some huge fee for every, megabyte above what your rate plan is. So, you keep going higher and higher in cost until you get to unlimited, amount of megabytes that you could download per month. That's what they want to apply nationwide to the large companies like your eBays and your Googles and your Amazons and all that. They want to charge them by how much bandwidth they're using.
But I think about bandwidth. I think about chunk transactions. But this is actually, if I understand you correctly, Peter, this is more like the per minute nature of a cell phone contract.
Exactly.
You've got 900 minutes a month
exactly.
for $39.95. But if you go to 901 minutes, that first minute costs like
Precisely.
Crazy.
In other words, instead of having bean counters, you have bit counters. And they want to charge you by the amount of data that you're pushing through the system. But everybody's saying the internet tubes are all full. That's absolute crap. Anybody who understands the internet understands that there's huge amounts of bandwidth on the internet as a whole. It's massive. We're not bumping that ceiling.
Well, the thing is, I was trying to talk to him about bandwidth for serving the audio program that we produce, and if we want to, like I said, if we want to serve a million people, we have to pay for that much capacity. And we pay it to somebody who has the servers to accommodate it.
And he tried to mix that in the conversation as if computer hardware had something to do with it. What kind of computer you had. I mean, which is a total non sequitur. It has nothing to do with that. I mean, we all know about computers. There's no point. See, we can go into all these.
No, I don't have a bad widget. I understand that.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get through. I don't trust these bastards, okay? I'm not talking about Mr. Landreth. I'm talking about the companies. I don't trust them to do the right thing because I've never caught them doing the right thing.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
I've caught them doing the wrong thing a million times. Anybody who's ever had trouble getting their phone bill adjusted knows how responsive they are.
Okay, and then he brought in this thing about how we had so many options and how things were improving so quickly because AOL was providing broadband. Yeah, AOL is providing it. You can get it from Yahoo. You can get it from just about anybody you want to, any of the big names. Problem is, though, it's got to go through your local phone company or your local cable company.
The last leg is always the phone company.
Exactly.
I've learned that the hard way here in this studio.
The damn last mile is the huge bone of contention. Nobody wants to deal with that last mile. And you know, and
well,
and
by the same token,
that copper, you know, that's absolutely ridiculous. You could any office in America these days is running 100 megabit. You know, between their server and all the machine, well, 10 megabits, maybe some offices. But, you know, 100 megabits over copper is nothing. We do it every day. You can pick it up at CompUSA.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Where do you stand? It seemed to me a reasonable argument, Peter, that you don't want to regulate it. I really, really don't want an FCC of the Internet.
Oh, hell no.
You know, well, for a variety of reasons. And what I'm trying to understand here is I was in the conversation and I'm asking you to tell me.
Well, it was a double whammy. It was mixed. There was broadband deployment is one issue, and then control of the internet by the actual, you know.
So is that what it is? Is that what it is, Peter? They're proposing some sort of a trade-off whereby on surcharges to phone bills or internet bills or whatever, American citizens will help expand the internet to their less fortunate brothers and sisters. You know,
oh,
you know,
hell no!
And,
hell
but
no!
But the trade-off is that in exchange for doing that, somehow or another, we're going to give control of the internet to the telecoms.
No, I mean, the trade-off is that they get to make more money because they get to give you custom programming and deliver, you know, the Comcast flavor movies over your internet service. And perhaps block out the other services that are providing movies over the internet.
You know, I hated
music
it.
Music downloads, et cetera.
I hated it when Turner Broadcasting colorized Casablanca.
Oh, that was hell, wasn't it?
But the same thing applies to my internets.
Well, that's me. Oh, yeah. That's
I don't want anybody telling me that I can have this content or that content, and that is, you know, please expand the internet. But that's not my issue.
He came right out and said that he had no problem with people charging for extra bandwidth and all, you know, the usage of the extra bandwidth. But what that means is that only the big guys can afford to play it, and we're kicked to the curb.
Right. I'm not going to have that kind of money, Peter.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're going to apply
not
that
for the number of listeners you have. No way.
But they're going to apply that fee schedule to me the same they would or on some sort of sliding scale or whatever that they'd apply to Google.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
So why should we? I mean, you talk about breaking the internet. Why should we go down that road? That's going to break the internet.
Well, that's absolutely true. And they just want to make the internet another way to deliver freaking cablevision. Is what it comes down to with all the advertising and all. I mean, you know, there's enough ads as it is, but, you know, we don't need another damn Cablevision. Cablevision's awful as it is. I mean, you know, I don't need another one. I mean, not that I have one. We don't even have cable out here. And no, and then people will say, oh,
you know, the next thing you know, you're going to, Peter, the next thing you know, you're going to be putting up pictures on the internet of you with little flies on your eyes and stuff. I mean, you know, no cable, no broadband.
I know all I've got to do.
Did you climb the pole to use the phone?
Well, you know, I harness doggy to the car because we can't afford gas.
Right.
At the town. And, you know, we use the high speed there, you know, come back home. You know, it's the other side of the digital divide. But,
well, I wouldn't trust this Congress to put a damn Band-Aid on.
Oh, Lord. And, you know, Congress listening to somebody like that would, in the end, they would glaze over because they don't have any technical perspective.
Well, see, I began to understand because he was a very reasonable, very nice man. I have a feeling he and I could go out on the links and play a wonderful round of golf together.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Really enjoy it.
I didn't know a damn thing about the way the damn thing works. I would have believed every word of it.
But the other side of that is that if this is what you bust your ass, you go through an electoral process, you spend a freaking fortune, you go to Washington and this is, and you know, you listen to people like this all day in, day out, and, you know, everybody speaks in reasonable terms. Nobody loses their temper. Nobody calls you a black stag and blue nose knot pole frazzleack. And, you know,
where there's not broadband, so nobody's affected.
Right. How can we ask them to make real decisions about this kind of thing? My congressman, Nick Rahal, voted for that COPE provision. He voted in the majority on that thing.
Well,
and it's, you know, and I had a conversation with his office, and they said, you know, the guy I talked to said, you know, we got called the day after that, and we were told we voted the wrong way, and we may have.
Well, there's really
so
no
we'll fix it in committee.
I mean, in the United States, for real broadband, except for cable and phone companies, people will say, why don't you get satellite internet? Well, why would I pay, you know, three times, four times, five times as much for a satellite connection that is just slightly better than dial-up. You know, I need real internet. I don't need a little bit better than dial-up. I need the real internet. You know, it's just absolutely absurd, the whole thing.
Well,
have you read the power lines, for crying out loud?
Well, yeah. I mean, the power company was talking about getting into the internet business, and
uh-huh.
And they've
that dropped like a hot potato pretty quick.
Well, I mean, I got to admit, I'm enough of a stupid Luddite that the thought of the same thing that my 110 comes in on bringing me my internet.
Yeah, but
oh, wrong key.
Oops. I guess they heard that.
Yeah, that was a little terrifying. But you know, that infrastructure already exists.
Sure, it already exists. But in the case of rural areas, who are the people who are screaming for broadband? The rural areas are handled by rural electric associations or cooperatives. Ours is Talcon Electric. It's a co-op. It's owned by the members. You know, and like every 3 or 4 years, you get like a check for like $30 for your dividends or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, so that would be, you know.
Well, maybe that's the answer, is to let the people take it into their own hands.
Well, it has been the answer for many communities, but that is what they are lobbying so heavily against, because it's government competing with private industry. Okay, so all right, we'll give it to private industry. Then private industry says, uh-uh, not profitable, can't be bothered. And then on top of everything else, now what they want to do is allow the phone company and the cable companies to control content. You know, it's just getting nastier, nastier. You know, here, by the time I get, you know,
and that's what they are. I'm beginning to think I did a really lousy job with this interview, Peter.
You did not. You were asking excellent questions, but Bob, he was.
But it is controlling content, isn't it?
What?
It is controlling content.
Well, it is controlling content. Yes, when you want to be both a.
I don't want the government to control content,
right.
but we're gonna let Verizon.
Right, you're either a carrier or you're freaking, you know, a source. You're a company that provides some sort of content. You're either content or you're a carrier. And when you start blurring that line, it's going to get ugly.
Well, I'm scared of this issue, Peter.
Well,
I'm terrified of this issue. Because I was sitting there trying to wrap my head around the conversation as we went, and I've read a bunch about it. I have not read the bill yet. I freely confess that. But you know, and I mean, I'm not completely a babe in the woods where this stuff is concerned. But apparently,
no,
I'm dumber than dirt, or dumber than I thought I was.
He was a great dancer.
But the thing is, if I can't get it. And I live in this stuff, and I live by this stuff. If I can't get it, how can I expect some half-hungover Republican congressman to understand it?
Yep, we're all doomed. And, you know, and it's not a matter of we're running out of space, and that's why they have to charge more. They want to charge more because they want to charge more. The bottleneck is that last mile. They want to improve that last mile. That's where the bottleneck is.
Well, you know, I didn't want to air my dirty laundry, but I'll do it now. You know, when I think back to the nights that we lost programming on this program.
Oh, Jesus.
Because it thundered 30 miles from here. and I mean, people may not believe me, but this is the honest truth. We're not talking about rain. We're not talking about a bad connection somewhere that you know a drop of rain dripped into the line and screwed the circuit.
$2,000 a month for that T1 line?
$600.
Well, you know, $600, $2,000 would be the same.
No, not even for a full T1 though. For $284.
Yeah, you used to call it a chihuahua.
Yeah, it was the terrified chihuahua T1. Because every time it thundered, no rain, no lightning. It just, if it thundered, I lost connectivity.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And I am still fighting with Verizon over it.
Yeah. You are due a huge refund, dude.
Oh, I'm... Yeah.
We could throw a chat room pizza party and fly everybody somewhere for you. The amount of money you're due back.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we could have a real good time on what we're due back. But, you know, and that's what I was trying to talk to him with, you know, about a recourse to the court system or the Public Service Commission. Justice delayed is justice denied. And there ain't going to be no justice.
Yeah. Well, he was slick. He was mixing internet service providers. He was mixing content providers, and he was mixing carriers all into one little soup. And he was stirring it really, really fast. So no matter what question you asked him, it would always connect somehow. And it was just non sequitur after non sequitur. I just couldn't take it. I was screaming and yelling. God, you can't do that to me again. Never do that to me.
Well, see, I'm trying to open the dialogue. I'm trying to find out what the other side's thinking about.
Yeah, you've done good, dude. Oh, that was a revelation to see how slick they are.
He seemed like such a nice gentleman.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And then, you know, he tried to give you the idea that he cared about this, and this was something close to his heart and how you agreed. But did you notice he didn't bother to call you for the freaking interview? You had to track him down.
Well, that was not his fault.
Oh, well.
The person who booked the interview sent us one phone number that was off by one digit.
Oh, I see.
But I found it. But, you know, Agnes Sherlock Holmes Kincaid will not be denied.
Uh-huh. I wish I had been.
Yeah, she wishes she had been.
Yeah, well,
I haven't engendered this much feeling since the night the night the sweet liberal lady tried. Well, never mind.
Yeah, we were just ranting. We were all going nuts in the chat room.
I don't know. Maybe I've learned something from this, Peter. But you know, the fact of the matter is, I am concerned. And please, let's understand. Well-meaning liberals could break this as easily as ill-meaning conservatives.
Sure, the man was he was excellent. I never saw anybody dance like that. It was incredible.
But I agree with him to the extent that I want tech people to decide what's right about this. But I don't necessarily want it to be tech people who are dependent upon an autograph every 2 weeks from the CEO of Verizon.
Yep, I completely agree. I don't want it decided by senators who think that
it's a series of tubes.
Trucks and tubes.
DJ Ted Stevens, DJ Jazzy Ted.
Oh, jeez. Oh, man. Well, that was great, Bob. I loved it. It was great. I now know how freaking evil it is. It's just all stirred up. It's a mess, just like anything else Republicans get their hands on. It's a damn mess.
Well, you know, unfortunately, we're 23 minutes away from me being able to do anything about it. But it made my head swim.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, I thought I had my head around these things a little bit. I thought I had some understanding of it. I don't know if I do or don't.
Well, it would have been hard for me too, Bob, to talk to somebody like that, because you're trying to follow the conversation, not go completely postal like I'm. See, I have the luxury of screaming and yelling at you or with you, but you don't have that luxury.
I can't watch TV anymore. The newspapers aren't worth a tinker's damn.
Yeah.
The radio stations are all damn jukeboxes or right-wing mouthpieces. This is the one medium that I have left to me.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, and this is outside the existence of the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah.
This is all I've got left.
It's all I've got left too, dude.
That in the library, and I'll never sell books short. But
yeah.
Doggone it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be lost without this, and I've got a feeling that there are people out there, you know, and you know, he said, well, you know, I don't want the net regulated. I've got a filter for porn and stuff like that, and I agree with him on that. You know, that's why there's an on and off button. I don't need a government making my decision about that kind of thing.
Yeah, this is absolutely true.
But there are people out there who are thinking, well, you know, this evil internet, if we can just do XYZ to it, we can make it all go away. And you know what? I'll tell you a little secret, Peter. And this is the God's honest truth. Our side, you know, Howard Dean's campaign in 2004 proved that our side has a much greater handle on the potential
of
the internet than the other side does. And I think for that reason, I mean, the big telecoms would like to throttle the CEO of Vonage if they got a chance. And this is not to suggest that I'm in love with Vonage. I'm not.
You know it. Yes, sir. And that's one of the reasons they're after eBay, because, you know, eBay and Skype are in bed together now. You could
sure.
Skype off the eBay home base.
Well, and, you know, where will Google Note go next?
Uh-huh.
So, you know...
making it safe for children. What are they saying? Let's have Disney run the internet. Okay, well, we all know what Disney does. Duh, we just saw it last week.
No, that ain't no mouse. That's a rat now.
That's exactly. It's a damn rat.
Peter, thank you so much.
Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you for letting me go on.
Oh, no, please. I thank you for enlightening me a little bit.
Well, I'm just mad, damn it.
I'm sick. Well, you're mad. I'm confused.
I'll talk to you later.
Later.
Bye.
And let's move on to Sarge. Hey, Sarge, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, hey, I'm glad you talked to Peter about that. That guy should have talked to Peter himself.
Well, maybe, or I should have let Peter handle the interview, and I'm not being facetious about that.
Well, you know, Peter knows his stuff.
Yeah, well,
and that's why it's great that Peter called in, because he educated us right there, didn't he?
Well, he did, and I'm surrounded by people who really understand this stuff far more than I do, Sarge. But again, I keep coming back to the fact that I'm scared to death somebody's going to break this.
Well, you know, I was telling Agnes, and I'm fixing to go on a rant, so just get ready.
All right, I'll step back.
Okay. But the thing that aggravates me is their priorities are so screwballed. Bob, we got people sitting here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast that are being poisoned to death. We've got people who are getting killed down here because crime rates are up. Suicide rates are up 200 to 300%. We have a vice president who ordered the electricity companies not to go ahead and work on getting hospitals restored power because he wanted the refinery to get power. So they had to stop working to take care of two rural hospitals so this refinery could get power. And they want to worry about censoring the Internet. Hey, what needs to be censored is this administration.
Well, I think that's the bottom line for me on this, Sarge, is that, like I said, I wouldn't trust this Congress. And you know, it's run by Republicans. The Democrats can't do anything. We hear about, the Democrats don't have any ideas. Tell me the last time a Democrat got a chance to advance an idea in this Republican Congress. The compromise on torture has been reached with Senate Republicans. It wasn't reached with any Senate Democrats. I would not trust this Congress, this Republican Congress, in it, like I said, in an outhouse with a muzzle on.
Tortured. Let's see, Bush wants to redefine torture or clarify torture.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? It doesn't take a lot of clarification. Torture is wrong, idiot.
Yeah. How hard is that to figure out?
God, this guy makes me sick. You know, I can understand why Mike Malloy is always saying,
have I told you tonight how much I hate these people?
Bingo. Yeah. And I tell you, I am so fed up with it. I live with these right-wing morons around here. I see these Southern Baptists walking these streets around here. When you request an interview with them, like I did with a youth director of the First Baptist Church here in Columbia, and you tell them, I'm going to ask you some tough questions that you're not going to like. Is that okay with you? Oh, sure. Well, I'll call you when I can get back with you. And you never hear from them again because they don't want the children to know. They don't want the truth to come out. They don't care because all they care about is their fascism, about ruining our nation. And I am sick of it, Bob.
Yes. Yes.
I told you I was going to rant.
No. Go, brother, go. Don't hold back. That's what this is for.
I got a little old dog here that's wagging her tail and looking at me like, are you okay?
Is that the worried wag or the take-me-out wag?
That's the worried wag.
Oh, okay, just checking. Well, you know, I'm sitting here reading the latest update on the story about the so-called compromise between the White House and the Senate. It says the White House backed off on an effort to define language in the Geneva Conventions. They didn't. Well, you know, that tells me something when you use a phrase like backed off, because if they were going to actually follow the language and the law of the Geneva Conventions, and incidentally the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution, it would have said the White House abandoned its effort.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm sure none of our good Democrats bothered to ask this question. I hope they did, but who knows? Who is the United States Congress to rewrite the Geneva Conventions?
Well, those things were negotiated by a president and signed on to by, you know, affirmed by the, ratified by the Senate, you know, according to constitutional principles. So nobody. They got no business monkeying with it. But, you know, the thing is, I'm looking at this thing. The agreement explicitly gives the president, quote, the authority for the United States to interpret the meaning and application of the Geneva Conventions. Okay? I told people 2 days ago, and I took some hell for it, that Lindsey Graham, after all of his posturing and posing for Bob Schieffer on the Sunday morning show last, that for all of that, that he would wind up bending over, getting on his knees, and doing for George Bush what Monica did for Bill, and by God, he and John McCain did.
Yeah, it's like, where is our leadership? You know, maybe we need to just get rid of some of these these Democrats, and let's get the Rocky Andersons and all of these guys that really want to speak out, because, you know, I'm tired of not having leadership, and it's time we see some people step up and take leadership or move over and get out of the way.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way. I mean, I couldn't believe that Nancy Pelosi and Charlie Rangel got suckered into coming out. I mean, Nancy Pelosi called Hugo Chavez a thug.
You know what I said about Nancy before?
Well, I know, but Charlie Rangel, you know, the stand that they're taking on that is he may be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And nobody,
well.
And nobody, you know, we'll criticize him here, and Hugo Chavez, you need to shut up. But the thing is, they missed it. You know, it was a one-liner.
You know,
it was something delivered by Henny Youngman in Spanish. But here,
as I'm concerned, they need to put Bush in the Hague and let him be there. You know.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, here's John McCain talking about this deal, Sarge. There is no doubt that the integrity and letter of the spirit and the spirit of the Geneva Conventions have been preserved. Well, then why do you need a compromise deal?
Right, right.
Because if it hasn't been preserved.
Well, I tell you what, now, I served in two branches of the military. I served during wartime, and I'm going to tell you right now, and there is only one simple thing to look at here, and it tells you everything you need to know. When you start torturing people, I don't care what kind of caveats you put on it, when you start torturing people, you are putting your troops in worse shape than you ever want them in.
Yeah, well,
and these SOBs who are putting our troops in harm's way right now with this illegal occupation, now they want to torture. They are killing our young people with this.
Yeah.
I will not.
Well, dig this. I mean, just so you can know what they're talking about here. Under Thursday's deal, a list of actions considered to be grave breaches of the conventions would be codified into federal criminal law. But wait, the president would be able to prohibit by executive order actions that are considered less than grave. Grave breaches would include torture, cruel or inhuman treatment, biological experiments, murder, mutilation or maiming, intentionally causing serious bodily injury, rape, sexual assault or abuse, and taking hostages. Okay, but the thing is, that is what is defined as torture. But they have still left that, you know, this is a loop. Poll about the size of a tunnel mouth. What all they have to do is say, well, you know, we've already defined that waterboarding does not constitute torture, therefore we are not violating the law.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
you know,
if you want to see, I'm no prophet, but that's
what you're going to hear.
Yeah, if you want to see torture, Bob, just come on down here to Jackson County, Mississippi. There's a lot of torture going on right down here. We've got disabled people who are in flood zones who don't have proper access to their FEMA trailers. Their FEMA trailers stink. They're poisonous. There's crime three times the normal rate. Suicide 200 to 300% increase. The people are scared. They're depressed, alcoholism is up,
drug use,
right, and that is torture. That is torture. Mr. Bush, you are guilty of torture, sir, and you need to be removed. That's the way I feel, Bob.
Well, I think you're right, Sarge.
Okay.
I think you're right.
I think I better go take my chill pill and
Well, you know, I mean, whatever, take a deep breath. Like John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night. But thank you, Sarge. Thank
you're
you so
welcome,
much.
Bob. Thank
and
you.
Thank you for everything you guys do at Powers and Morrison.
Hey, we're more than glad to. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Go and have a look at Sarge's column today, powersandmorrison.com. I think you'll find it quite interesting. And onward to our friend David in Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem, Bob. I just thought I'd bring this in. I didn't hear the interview you were talking about, so, but you were talking about Verizon, and I know that well.
I know that well,
and I want to suggest something to you that I think that might help in your situation. I don't know the details, but it seems like you've had some woes with Verizon. What I would do is I would ask Consumer Reports over at their website to do a guest article on your experience with Verizon. I'm sure they would be interested in you telling your story and your experience.
Oh, I will tell that story to anybody who wants to hear it.
Well, I think the good place to start is the Consumer Reports website. I think people underestimate what you can do when you get the word out on a platform.
See, I wish the free market existed like Mr. Landreth described, because when I had my first problems with Verizon, I would have said, well, I'm a member of the free market, and I'm going to get rid of you, and I'm going to get me something that works. But it doesn't exist.
I'm pretty much done with Verizon. I think I'm going to just go to Comcast or something. I just got it because I got a deal where I get the phone and the net, and they gave me a good deal for it. And now with all the technology and the independent companies coming in by the droves, there's really no reason to keep it.
But the thing is, as Peter noted, David, the last mile is always going to be your phone company. Or your cable company, or whatever connects to your house, because these other providers, they're not out there stringing wire.
That's true, and I think, but with the technology that is coming in, there was the announcement of the laser chips being developed, and no more circuits and wires. I think we're going to have a really good time for communications. We already are, but I think we're going to have on the next level like nobody can ever imagine.
Well, I hope. Well, that's my concern, David, is that there be a next level, and that some corporatist isn't out there trying to prevent the next level from happening.
Well, I think what's going to happen is if that happens, I think you're going to see the pirate radio thing take on a whole different, like anyone couldn't imagine.
Is it time for me to get an eye patch and start saying yar?
No, but the reason why I called, I think you'll find this interesting, and I hope people are just going to, they won't believe this, but Michael Steele's campaign is imploding in Maryland.
Is it really?
They did something really, really stupid. The Republicans, they put an ad together. You're not going to believe this, Bob. I even looked at the ad, and I was like, here's the headline. And then I'll read the dialogue. Black Republican group ads accused Dems of starting KKK, claims MLK was Republican.
No.
Yes.
No, that's from The Onion.
No, it's not. And I even have the script for it. See, this was the only reason I called tonight, to read off the script for it. So the National Republican Association decided that they would put together a black African-American ad. And what did they decide to do? Well, they decided to do a BET-UPN move where you have two black women chatting about Republicans and Democrats. And here's what they say. Pam, Dr. King was a real man. Tina, you know he was a Republican. Pam, Dr. King a Republican, really? And then Tina says, Democrats passed those black codes and Jim Crow laws. Democrats started the Ku Klux Klan. Pam, the Klan? White hoods and sheep? Tina, Democrats fought all civil rights legislation from the 1860s to the 1960s. Democrats released those vicious dogs and fire hoses on blacks. Pam, seriously? Tina, and the Dixiecrats remained Democrats and vowed to vote for a yellow dog before Republicans. Republicans freed us from slavery and put our right to vote in the Constitution. Pam, what? Tina, Republicans started the NAACP, Affirmative Action, and the HBCU.
Jesus was a Republican.
Yeah, it gets better. Pam, Democrats have bamboozled blacks. Tina, Democrats blocked the minimum wage passed by Republicans. Over $200 billion have been spent on education, health care, and job training since President Bush took office. Pam, so Democrats want to keep us poor and voting only Democrats? Tina, Democrats want us to accept same-sex marriages, teen abortions without parents' consent, and suing the Boy Scouts for saying God in their pledge. Pam, we need to think and vote our own values. Tina, exactly. Democrats have talked the talk, but Republicans have walked the walk. Pam, I hear you, girl. It's time for us to do the walk. Together they laugh about it.
Oh, my God. Vernon Robinson's people are doing Michael Steele's campaign.
I think... No, but I think the sad thing was is it's still on the radio.
And everybody's really, naturally they're really upset about it. And I think it's almost poetic justice in a way. And it goes to the main point of what I talk about Republicans whenever I talk about this subject is that if you give them enough rope, they're going to hang themselves, and they're going to implode on themselves. So you just have to sit back and observe and watch their moves and what they do. And sometimes it's better to just let them put out what they think is I have a hard time.
That was an outreach ad, right?
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that the National Black Republican Association went forward with this, though.
We're going to go out and put an ad out to the scary Negroes, help them vote Republican.
I can't believe it's still on the radio.
Well,
they still haven't polled it yet.
This is a nuanced thing. I mean, it was LBJ who said, "Look, we've lost the South for an entire generation because of advancing civil rights." LBJ wasn't a Republican. You know, that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 didn't come in under President Goldwater or President Nixon. But the fact of the matter, you know, George Wallace was a Democrat.
The thing that's coming up right now, and people should be aware of it, we're never going to be out of that age of where politics, because of everything coming at us at once, we're never going to leave this. We're always going to have a political war every day, and that's the way the Republicans like it.
Right. Well, that's how they do business, and it just
and we just have to get smarter at that.
We can't get tired of the fight, David.
Oh, that's right. And people have to realize, you know, I hate when Democrats say we're gonna win the battle, we're gonna win the war or whatever. Nobody wins the war, people. It's all little battles. You're gonna lose. Like,
this isn't a football game.
You're gonna lose like tons. You're gonna lose more times than you ever count. You're gonna have blood, and it's gonna be gory, and it's gonna be messy, literally and physically. And you just have to deal with that. And if you can't deal with that,
and you get up the next daggum day and you go fight the fight some more.
That's right. Look,
you cannot have Bush fatigue. You cannot have political fatigue.
Look, let me give you a perfect example. Robert Kennedy is still going headstrong with his Diebold story. I don't know if you heard about it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
He's
got to keep fighting.
Right. He's putting out a new article in Rolling Stone. It doesn't matter if it's
No, that's why, you know, we're at
National Enquirer. As long as you have a piece out there.
Right. And see, we've got a roll. We're slap out of time, David, but that's why
no
we're going
to
that's
I
why we will
to
be here tomorrow night and hopefully every night thereafter.
Yeah, that's what you
And every
do.
Day.
Look. You got to have the red. Everyone in this fight is going to have the red badge of courage, just like in the book. You can't get away from it, from not getting metaphors.
And we all get to see the elephant.
That's right.
David, take care.
All right, later, Bob.
Bye now. The show tonight was produced ably by my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes. Announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by John Fox. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network. Shelby LaPrey at RadioPower.org simulcasts our program and is our streaming partner. The programs happen because, well, Gene, by the way, Gene is our news editor at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We have fabulous moderators at the chat room. And the program happens because several thousand members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights get up every day and go build the American dream. And in supporting this network, they're saving the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.
Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, featuring the best of Mike Malloy.
And you're swallowing all life's lies.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, good evening. True Seekers, Malloy here on Resistance Radio. Thank you very much for joining us. I have to tell you, we are experiencing some really bad thunderstorms and hail and all sorts of high winds and nasty stuff here in the Metro Atlanta area. So if you hear a crackle and a pop and we're gone, our engineering cohorts in Detroit will immediately put on a rebroadcast, probably of last night's program. Just wanted to let you know. All right? Program today produced, or tonight produced by Catherine Bay. Robin Bittman announces for us, as always. The phone number here is 800-825-5937, 800-TALK-YES. Or you can email MikeDMalloy at earthlink.net. Quote of the day from Aldous Huxley. Dictators can always consolidate their tyranny by an appeal to patriotism.
Dictators can always consolidate their tyranny